Tonight, State of Survivor Summit Season 41 and beyond is sponsored by our friends over at BetOnline. There's no shortage of action going on with our exclusive partners, BetOnline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back with the UFC, boxing, NASCAR, and soccer leading the way. And BetOnline has all the best odds and lines for the upcoming games and matches. If you need more, BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA and UFC happening every day live for you to check out. And if you're looking for something else other than sports, BetOnline also has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and the best props in the business. Visit BetOnline.ag or use your mobile device and join now to receive your new welcome bonus and start playing today. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast1 for your sign-up bonus. Visit BetOnline.ag and don't forget that promo code Podcast1 for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hey everybody, what's going on? I'm Rob Cesternino, and we are back here with a very special podcast for you tonight, because we are going to be talking about the State of Survivor Season 41 and beyond in a joint podcast production between Rob as a podcast and the Survivor Specialists. Very excited. Thank you for joining us here for what should be a very fun panel where we talk about with Survivor what is working, what's not working, where Survivor needs to go in the next 5 years and beyond. And so I'm very happy to welcome in the co-collaborators for this podcast that we've been talking about trying to do something together for some time. And here we are. It's the Survivor Specialist. Phil and Alexa are here. Phil and Alexa, how are you?
Very good and very excited to be here. I know we have been trying to do this for a little bit, and it's really exciting to be able to get on here and talk about, you know, Survivor and where it's going, considering we really have no idea right now.
Yeah, we have no idea. Alexa, in the past, I've done stuff like this with Stephen Fishback. We've talked about a bunch of ideas to throw into Survivor, but sometimes we do that and they've already filmed the next two seasons of Survivor. So we're like, maybe in like 2 years, we'll see something, but there is no new Survivor that's been filmed. What a time to talk about the future of Survivor.
What a time. And hearing 41 and beyond is could be ominous, but it's also pretty exciting because we have no idea how long this will go on for, and hopefully for a really long time.
2.5 hours.
At the very least.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We have so much to talk about. So excited. Phil and Alexa here. We also have here with us on the panel, we are very lucky to have here with us from Survivor Island of the Idols. She also is a podcaster and somebody who talks about Survivor all the time on Talent Recap. Please welcome Lauren Ashley Beck.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. How are you doing, Rob?
Doing okay, Lauren. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm glad to be talking some Survivor with the greats. I've looked up to all of you and listened to all of your Survivor coverage. So to be here is an honor. Okay. I'm really grateful.
Next week, we'll have the State of Survivor podcasting panel, where then people can talk about all the things that are working or not working in Survivor podcasting. And then we'll hear from all of the recent players. You could give us a bunch of feedback.
Okay. That'll be a nice little podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that's Twitter. That's Twitter.
Yeah. What's not working in podcasting? Just head to Twitter.
Okay, and we are here with, as I like to say, the most knowledgeable Survivor expert in the entire world. Of course, she knows everything about the U.S. edition of Survivor and the international editions as well. Please welcome the great Shannon Gus is here. Shannon, how are you?
I'm great. It's always a really big title to live up to. Luckily, I put no stock into it because I don't think you're right. But if anyone else does, it's a lot to live up to.
Okay. Well, Shannon, it's great to have you here as well to be part of this panel, to really be able to bring your expertise of all the things that you've seen in International Survivor, that things that could be potentially introduced into American Survivor, or if things that were coming up that we're talking about have been done on International Survivor and don't exactly work the way that we think that they are. All great things. And the hope is the goal here tonight is to hopefully that there is some actionable thing that comes out of this conversation tonight that maybe can improve the show that we all love so much and has been such a big part of all of our lives.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's a global community at this point, you know, and I think we see it coming into the U.S. more and more. I mean, there was no Idol the Tribal, but Adam Klein had seen Survivor South Africa, so we thought there was. So you can't really escape that kind of international community. So I'm here to make sure that you can steal all the international ideas, take all the good ones, take it from us. Like, that's the American way, right? So you guys are welcome. We'll give you all our good ideas.
Okay. All right. So we're going to structure this in a couple of different segments tonight. We're going to start off and we're going to talk about some of the things that in the very short term, the things that can be introduced immediately to Survivor and probably the things that are the most urgent and pressing to kick things off before Survivor even goes back to the drawing board for Survivor 41. And those are the issues involving the casting and some of the production issues of the show. Then we're going to talk about some of the things that that we like that maybe could be tweaked a little bit more. And then finally, we're going to talk about the things that we have gotten from our listeners and people that submitted to a Google form. We had over 300 responses to a Google form of people having ideas of things that could be added or new things that Survivor could try out. And we'll get into potentially some things from maybe the international editions as well. And always, we'll take your feedback, hashtag RHAP, if you want to send in any responses. Anything else that the panel would like to address up front?
No, I think you covered it.
All right.
We trust you.
See how good we can get things done if we do a dry run before the show. Okay. So yeah. very excited to be underway. Of course, that Phil and Alexa, do you want to talk about what you guys have been up to in this off season?
Yeah, we've been doing a weekly podcast with Once Upon an Island where every Monday night we've been getting together and we've been breaking down how players won Survivor. We've been trying to break down their strategies and how they did it. And we started with season one. We're doing four winners a week. Every episode's about 2 hours long. We spend about a half hour on each winner. And we're halfway through. We just hit Sandra Diaz-Twine's second win last night, actually. So we're doing that. That's what we've been doing. And that's really it. I mean, other than that, you know, we're waiting to hear more. We're waiting to hear some information.
Okay. And the best part about that is at the end of it, we're going to have all episodes compiled. So for those of you who want to listen to 20 straight hours of three people talking about Survivor winners, fret not, we have that for you.
Okay. All right. Be on the lookout for all that. Are those the only the winners at war, or did you focus on all 40 of the winners?
It's all 40 winners from season one through. So our first episode covers seasons 1 through 4 and then 5 through 8. And we're doing it that way. Otherwise, it would take way too long to break it down. If we tried to do all the winners at one time, it was just impossible. So we did it as a series.
Okay. All right. Be on the lookout for that. All right. So I guess the biggest thing that we want to hit up front are the changes that need to happen for Survivor in regards to casting. Lauren, there's been so much movement in this area, and I've just been so impressed by all the people that have come together to really just sound the alarm on the issues that are going on in terms of the lack of minority casting on Survivor. There's a petition that's been started, which I highly encourage people to sign. Could you just speak a little bit about your thoughts on the petition and some of the work that's being done in this area?
So, I mean, I think the petition is great. If you guys don't know what it is, basically Wendell, Jatia, and Bryce from Purple Pants Podcast put together this petition that is basically calling for CBS and Survivor to have more diversity in all aspects of Survivor. So not just casting, but also in the editing process, who's in the room when you're meeting with different people. And I think it's great. I think that it's definitely something that needs to be brought to Survivor's attention. And it sounds like they're listening. And I think the main thing for everything is that I'm noticing, I'm hopeful for the future of where Survivor is headed. You know, our season wasn't the best for whatever reasons, but we did have a very diverse cast.
Yes.
So it does make me hopeful for the future of Survivor. And I have to be honest, even when I went in for my casting process and I saw Missy there, I was like, there's no way that we're both going to get on the show. And when I saw her there, I was like, oh, damn, Survivor. Okay. Like, I think it's, you know, and I mean, it shouldn't be that. That's also something that I want to say, but I was happy to see that.
Yeah. And I want to add also that, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, that I don't think that the show currently at this point in time is miles and miles away of where they need to be, at least in terms of casting. And I don't know, I haven't been, it's been a very long time since I was out there in terms of like who's behind the scenes. And from what I understand, they do have a lot of ways to go in terms of adding more diversity behind the camera. But in front of the camera, that the one season that this group got to cast post the Lynn Spillman era was one of the most diverse seasons in recent memory.
Sure. Yeah. And I do think in front of the camera, sure, we are seeing more diverse people. Behind the camera, if I think about the people that were in the room when I was auditioning, that diversity is not quite there just yet. But I think that is important. Representation is so important, and we need it on all aspects, not just the reality stars that you're seeing. We need it on all levels.
Now,
okay.
Yeah, that's very important. And I think that what's really encouraging right now is that I feel like this. I have not seen pushback on this. I feel like who's saying no to any of these ideas right now?
Right, and I think that's great. It's important. Everybody has been pretty receptive, and I do think people are trying to further educate themselves because maybe they didn't know or they weren't aware. So I do think that it's great. I also think that Survivor, what I would want, because I haven't said a lot publicly about this, a lot of this has been very overwhelming for me, but what I would want is for Survivor to not pigeonhole people of color. So don't put them in the stereotypes that people put them in. Don't put us in a box. And I think, like, even when you look at me on my season, I think that my story should be told as well as other people. Let me put it like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think, of course, because like I want to be respectful. I love Survivor. I don't think that Survivor's like, oh, she's black, we're not going to tell her story. I don't believe that. But I think, like, Rob, you did a know-it-alls, and you were like, I don't think if Lauren gets to the end, she probably is going to get any votes. And I think that's because of what was shown in the edit. Mm-hmm. That's what you were led to believe. Yeah. And I think that it would be better to know all of what happened out there. And of course, we're making a TV show. They can't, you know, it's not going to be the Lauren show, but I think it's important to show all aspects of the game and tell our stories.
Yeah. I think it's just very important to have, you know, different people. And I don't think that this is only an issue that black people face on Survivor. I think that we've talked about it a lot, especially in light of season 39, in terms of like telling the stories from the perspectives of women as well. That I just feel like that having a more diverse, you know, cast of people behind the camera allows people to be able to, you know, better facilitate telling those stories. And I think that that's going to be a theme, at least for me tonight, in terms of what are the ways that we could fix Survivor or make it even better. I think that we just need to focus more and more on the stories of these people. And I think that when you bring more diversity into the casting, that you have, in addition to trying to figure out, oh my God, how do we figure out a new game mechanic to make this interesting? Well, what if there are people that we haven't traditionally told their story? Wouldn't that be interesting to be able to see the plight of more different types of characters where we've seen sort of like the story of, you know, the alpha male challenge beast quite a few times? But I feel like that there are many characters. And Lauren, I really do think in Island of the Idols, I think we had a lot of new character archetypes that we didn't get to see. In addition, like people like Karishma and Vince and people like Elaine, also all very different people that I feel like that we could spend more time with these characters if we know how to better tell these different and diverse stories.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we have our heroes of Survivor. We have our Sandras and our Boston Robs, and they're amazing. But I even said on my season, I was like, you know, you look up to these people, you look up to these heroes. I'm also talking about Vesepia and Ceri and Sid and all of these other women that I feel should also be recognized as heroes. Why not? That's what I was talking about. When I'm talking about my heroes, yes, you guys all know I love Sandra, but I'm also talking about these women like Suri who aren't challenge beasts. When I see her, I'm like, I can do that. I'm capable. And I hope that when young girls see me, they're like, okay, she lived outside for 38 days. I can do that too. And I think that story needs to be shared and told a lot more.
Yeah.
From all perspectives, Vince's, Karishma's, all perspectives, not just Black women or Black men. I think it's important on all.
And additionally, I really think it's the kind of thing that helps improve the show year over year, because when you have this more a more diverse cast and you're telling those diverse stories, and then a more diverse audience is going to watch the show and the ratings are going to go up and more diverse people are going to apply, and you'll continue to improve the talent pool of people who, I think that that's definitely been said, like, well, you know, not as many people, not as many people that are minorities are applying for the show, and that's one of the reasons. But, you know, at some point, you know, it's a chicken or the egg where you have to, you know, you have to, you know, cast first, and then you know, if you build it, you know, you will see the applicant pool continue to change and grow, and you'll be able to, you know, reach more people and tell more stories as young people grow up and watch and see people who are like them on the show. And I think that that's just a great way for Survivor to continue to grow in this you know, next 5-10 years of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I do. I mean, they could put, you guys don't live in California, Phil, you do. They could put the auditions at the Forum. I know a bunch of people that will go in a Black neighborhood. They should put these auditions in areas where Black people are going to be or are going to know about them. Or I was reading something about Earl Cole, and he was saying how all of his winter interviews were on like K-Rock and country stations. That's all fabulous. But my ass isn't listening to K-Rock. I need to go to 105.9, Steve Harvey Show, 92.3. Let's put it out there in a way so that I'm relating to these people, and I think that needs to happen, and I'll help them make it happen. If they want somebody to go hold castings down at the Forum, I will do it.
Phil and Alexa and Shannon, do you guys want to weigh in on any parts of the challenges with casting?
I think what you both said about focusing on perspectives and focusing on personalities, I think that's the right way to go. I had never heard the word blurred until Davey was on my screen. That is a word that never existed in my life. And that's just something that was, I've never heard. I've never even heard that in a conversation. So I think showing that shows, to your point, Lauren, that there's no need to pigeonhole people. There are so many different personalities among so many different types of people. And if you showcase that, People will love it. I am sure that many people watched Davey and said, oh my gosh, like I can be on Survivor because Davey was on Survivor. So I'm now going to apply because a blurred has played. And I think when you put a lot of focus on that, and Davey obviously did a fantastic job of branding himself and putting himself out there. But I think if you continue to focus on the people and trust who you cast, that can only help.
And isn't that what we want anyway? Like when I watch Good Survivor, I crave those character moments, getting to know the people. That's what we want. So give the people what they want. Yeah. You know?
And well, it's not just Good Survivor. Good TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point, is that it makes the show actually better. Like I think the beauty of what Survivor was always meant to be was these new societies forming of diverse characters. And they never really fully realized that potential, but a lot of the richness of the show came from people meeting each other who might not have otherwise met each other. They could have taken it further. And I do actually think we've gone a bit backwards. I mean, a lot of my criticism of the show has been about how much more homogenized it's become as we've gone on. Homogenized play styles winning, homogenized stories being told, homogenized casting. And this was all pre-Island of the Idols, because I do agree that that was a really good step in the right direction. And I think that, you know, we want these stories to be told. It's a better show if it happens. It does speak to the richness of the show. And then beyond that, because I'm always thinking from a game perspective, it actually makes it a better game, because we often see and hear about that otherness coming out. It becomes an easy first boot Bryce, for example, you know, like something like that where you can just point to the other and just, you know, that person immediately goes home. Let's take out that very easy and unfortunate and ugly part of the game. Like, that's not a fun way to approach strategy. So if we can make it more even, it actually makes it a fairer game, a better game, a more interesting game. So there's really no downside to any of this. And obviously beyond that, representation matters on a broader scale as well. So absolutely no losing in, you know, focusing on diversity.
And I think going off what Shannon just said, Survivor has a problem with the word verse a lot of the time. And I hope that as they move forward with this and as they start casting more diverse casts, they never use the whole this versus that, like how they did in Cook Islands and that, because what ends up happening then is you side with something. And that's what always seems to be. People, like, whenever you say, what could be a new idea we could do? Oh, Republicans versus Democrats. But that's not creating any type of unity. That's just creating a huge division. And so what I thought really works in Island of the Idols is they had a very diverse cast and they didn't use the word verse. It was just everybody is playing the same game. And therefore, like, they could actually align rather than thinking, like, in Cook Islands, you're being told, nope, this is my tribe. So I am against you. And that's a serious problem that I think they're moving away from, but I hope they continue to move away from it so we can have more moments like Jamal and Jack or more relationships like Lauren and Tommy. I think that's what's important for the show.
Okay. Is there anything else on the issues of casting? Because I feel like that we're all pretty much on the same page here in regards to immediate changes that Survivor needs to make. And look, I've said this a couple times. Survivor, I think, you know, it's hard to find silver linings in a global pandemic. But if you were going to look at one in terms of Survivor, there is a very good chance that, you know, had things stayed on their regular course, Survivor 41 would have already been filmed. Survivor 42 would currently be filming, a year's worth of Survivor. So if any of these changes that we're talking about now would not be able to be implemented in the short term, where Survivor has a real opportunity to be able to, you know, be just so assuming that they're able to get a season filmed in the can. And as Survivor fans, you know, we'll all keep our fingers crossed on that front. But to be able to turn around a season and be something that is, you know, be able to be with the time so quickly, I think that's a great advantage for the show. And I also think that they have a real opportunity to be able to tell super compelling stories of people who are, you know, potentially leaving their home during this this very dramatic time. And I think that it's going to be a very emotional season of the show, you know, if and when they're able to film as they plan to for later on in the summer. Okay.
Rob, no one is better at finding coronavirus silver linings than you are. Like, going all the way back to when you were like, at least they will have seen the whole season of Fire Token when they go out next.
Game plan.
Absolutely.
You're always looking at the positive. I appreciate that.
It gets me out of bed in the morning. I try to find the bright side and everything. Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about some things that are in the game now that maybe are not perfect and things that we would like to maybe see some modifications, maybe not completely scrap, but the things that we think that we can build on that are already there on Survivor. Let me just open it up to the panel because I feel like I've been talking too much. So let me hear from the group. What's the first thing that we should hit on?
Who wants to take?
I love it. Open it up and nobody wants to say anything. So if we're talking about things that work, that do need tweaking, I'm a big fan of Fire Tokens, and we talked about this a lot. And I actually think I saw one of the comments from it was in the responses, but somebody said, like what better time than now to do like a complete revamp of certain things? And I think now they've gotten even more time to really think about how Fire Tokens worked on season 40. They, like you just said, Rob, they didn't have to rush it into season 41 because they got to see how it all played out. And now they've heard people talk about it ended with a whimper. Like, it just fizzled out. There was nothing there. And I think now that they've had time for an entire summer to plan this and think about how to make that better, Fire Tokens is something that I think is a good addition to the show, and it could be like really perfected over this time so that we see a huge drastic change from season 40 to 41. Unlike when they first introduced the hidden media idol, we went through season 11, 12, 13, 14 before we really got to a better idol. This is something that could be much, much better one season later.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I think for the fire tokens, what I'd like to see from season 41 is survivor fire tokens. You know, then you can actually put the energy into making it a season based around this thing, overhaul the whole system, take what did work. Because we did see the glimpses of what worked. You know, Tony being extorted, great moment. There were a few really great moments, but then a lot did fall flat. For me, I think there are a few things that they could overhaul, but I think they should do that with a season really centered around fire tokens to make it a focus. And then once it's kind of in the, you know, lifeblood of the show, then it can just kind of be a part of the show like the idols are. So there's a lot that needs to change about it, but I do like it as a concept.
And it's kind of like Exile Island, you know, because it came about in Palau, but then they named a season after it in season 12. But it wasn't the whole season. It was a very big part of it, but it wasn't everything. There was so much else going on around it, and it really worked. And that was something we saw for season after season. So I really like that.
Okay. Mm. We have survivor fire tokens potentially on the table for.
And everyone's seen a 41. Whole season of fire tokens.
Everybody's
so
seen
good.
What they can do. But what is the point of fire tokens here? That how are people using the fire tokens in Survivor fire tokens? That I have thrown out the idea of, should the fire tokens, a la the genius, be worth some financial value? Does a fire, if you reach the end of the game, maybe the final three, maybe you don't even have to win, you reach the final three with every fire token in your possession is $5,000, $10,000. Could that potentially be something that is a real negotiating chip of like, hey, I need you to vote for this person. Here's my fire token. If you get to the final three, it's worth $10,000.
Phil and I had a conversation with Nick Majorano, Phil, I guess a month or two ago, and so many people miss the Survivor auction. And I think, Rob, when you talk about putting actual dollar amounts on these, there's a way to kind of weave the auction in and not so much make it a standalone reward challenge, but make it sort of a running reward that once, let's say once you hit the merge, if you have $10,000, you can bid on something. You can bid on letters from home. You can bid on food for just yourself. There's a way to bring back something that so many people love without it being a quote unquote broken system.
Okay. I have a pitch for the auction too for later also.
I also think too, Rob, what that does is that makes more human moments, even though it seems like something that wouldn't because it's now putting economics into Survivor. But I do think it creates more human moments because let's say Sarah, or like when Ben knows he's can't win the game. So he says, vote me out instead of you, Sarah. Sarah could sit there and be like, Ben, here's a token, like give me your token or something. Like there's some sort of negotiating there to kind of make amends for that type of situation. And I think obviously in your situation, Ben going home, if he got a fire token from Sarah, he's not going to get the $5,000, but there's something that could be manipulated there where either Ben gives him the Sarah and then we find out after the game, because it's not really trading money. Like, you know, if somebody says, take me to final two, if you win, I'll give you half the money. That's way different than actually using these as a negotiating tool.
I think we're trying to attribute more meaning to the fire tokens. And I think that's why the first instinct is, can they be worth actual money? You know, it's hard for me not to compare it to Garnet's at the moment. But the thing about the genius is the entire structure of the show is based around Garnet's. Like if you were to take out Garnet's, the show would collapse in on itself. Different to Survivor, where the fire tokens did feel like a little bit of an afterthought. So that's why I'm thinking, whenever they go back to restructure, the fire tokens, hopefully in their own, you know, season where they're the star and then the theme is around fire tokens, hopefully fire tokens could be, for me, I think they need to be, you know, the three pillars are more comprehensive. So even if they aren't worth more money, can they have extreme meaning in the context of the show? Can they, every advantage that you have has to be bought, you know, every, in challenges, they can be used in different ways in challenges. You know, all the ideas need to be under that. I also think the second pillar, transparency. You know, do we know,
yes.
I think, you know, Christian has said the vending machine, or is there a basket of things? You see how much they cost and then one is gone the next day. Someone has bought it. Do you know how much people have? There has to be greater transparency. And I also think there needs to be a structured economy where people know how much things are going to cost, what the basic inflation is going to be, and it's more measured and more thoughtful. So those, for me, whatever ideas we have for the fire tokens, I think have to kind of fall under those three pillars. And that's a lot. That's why I'm saying it kind of needs its own season. But I think that if we kind of move towards that, even if they don't, you know, equal money at the end of the show, we can give them more meaning within the context of the show itself.
Lauren, as the person who it was only a year ago that you were out there playing the game, that if there were fire tokens and they had some sort of monetary value, do you think that that would have been something that would have been useful in terms of maneuvering in the game?
I think it's one of those things, Rob, where it's difficult. How do you solidify? Like, if I say to you, I'm going to give you one of my tokens and it's $5,000, how do you solidify that? Is it just by word, by just us saying it? People promise a lot of things. So I think it could make for great TV, but I think that it might not flush out that well in the end, because how can you guarantee that somebody's going to be of their word in a game that's based on deceit? Because I know that if I had all these fire, like, let's say I had a ton of fire tokens and I wanted to build trust with somebody, I could totally just lie and be like, yeah, I'll give you five of my fire tokens at the merge. I know I'm voting them out tonight. So, and then they go home and we'll still have all these tokens. So I don't know. And I think it's good TV. But I think that's why, like they say in the game, you can't say, oh, well, if you don't vote me out, I'll give you 10 G's or whatever. Because once you add that monetary value to it, then it starts getting real hairy and people act funny about their money.
Well, so, I would love to know from a player perspective, because, you know, we as viewers don't think so much about like the increasing prize money as you get further and further in the game. I said when Ben gave up his spot to be fifth instead of third and get zero votes, I was like, isn't he giving up like 40 grand or something? Like, is this something that players are thinking about? Because other than Survivor the All-Stars, where I know that monetary value was changed to become a lot more drastic, I don't feel like that's something we hear a lot about. Like, okay, well, at least let me get two spots further because that's a bigger monetary prize, which would kind of be a similar value to the fire tokens.
I know for me, it was always eye on that $1 million prize.
That's what I would imagine.
But I think I never had that thought of like, oh, okay, well, at fourth place, I'm going to get this amount. Because I didn't really know what that was. But yeah, I think in the game, your mind is so focused on that $1 million. That's what you want.
Yeah, I think that to build on what Shannon was saying earlier, that whatever they do, I do think that they need to sort of like have a calendar of if this advantage is going to be eligible to be bought by a fire token on day 35, people should know on day one that that's what it's going to be. I've said I thought that Nick kind of got burned in this past season, where I think that he was trying to really work on like hoarding the fire tokens, and for what? That there was never going to be this thing at day 35 or day 36. That was like, all right, here it is. The Tyler Perry idol, everybody. it never came. It was only for the people that were on the edge of extinction. So I think that, you know, sort of just a schedule of if things are coming later in the game, I think that people at least, if not exactly what those things are, sort of like, hey, just so you know that there will be things to be available later on in the game for these things to be able to, because that this is something that we talk about a lot more on Big Brother. But when people know what the rules of the game are, it allows them to better strategize for things as opposed to everything being a surprise and random.
Mm-hmm. And Shannon, you brought up a good point of people knowing up front what they can and can't buy. If you're watching this, there's this basket that has peanut butter, has a tarp, it has pillows, and then you wake up one morning and the peanut butter's gone, I'm going to go around and try to figure that out. And that's going to
steal everyone's breath.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm going to steal everyone's breath. I'm going to look in all their bags. And that's going to cause, Phil, what we've always talked about, more human interaction. And that's going to cause more natural tension than getting extorted and not knowing who did it. Because you can't even figure out who did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that would kind of bring an auction to camp, wouldn't it? Like, imagine, like you have a basket there, you have fire tokens, you can take it at any time, but it's public. Maybe some things are covered. Maybe some things have question marks on price where, you know, you buy it and you don't know how much it's going to be. Either you have enough or you don't, and you've taken the risk. I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff there. It's funny, they've gotten rid of the auction. I'm saying we can make a whole season basically built around a season-long auction of fire tokens. Yeah. I kind of love that.
Well, I think that one of the main issues that we heard from people, and I think that we're probably all of the same mind, is that there are too many objects and things with powers and artifacts that are in the game, But something that was very powerful in this past season that we saw was the impact of things like peanut butter and food. Should we be doing more stuff in terms of like having there be more stops and points? Lauren, we saw how much people were motivated by bacon and pancakes in your season. Do you think that our food rewards almost like more interesting to the players than things like the little advantages, vote steals, or all these different random things that end up showing up in the game and then muddying the water?
Yeah, I would say for me personally, absolutely. Food reward was all she wrote. That's all I needed, and I was ready to go. And also, with all of these advantages and stuff, it became pandemonium. People were waking up at like 3 a.m. looking at these idols, and I knew that somebody had it. It's like, go to sleep. Like, what are you doing? And I think for me too, when I had the idol, I felt like everybody knew I had it as well. So I personally would love to see, I know we haven't gotten to this part yet, but I would love to see a season where there's no idols, call it Island of the Idols 2, let people go crazy, watch how crazy it goes, and then get back to the old school Survivor. I love the idea, though, of what Shannon said about maybe doing the fire tokens and having things hidden and maybe not. That would be really cool. And I think, yeah, when you add food into it and people are starving, you're just going to get so many more great TV moments than just like, oh, somebody found another freaking idol, their fourth idol. And it just doesn't hold the same weight anymore as back when they were introduced back in the
day. I think I can speak to this from an international perspective, because that's a big thing in international, where it's like the whole season 2 narrative was on the back of cookies, you know, cookies or wood was the dilemma, and it became like a massive storyline. And that's all it took. It wasn't an idol. It was cookies, and it's huge in Australian Survivor lore. So they can definitely use smaller things like that and kind of make it more of a narrative touch point.
Shannon, could you just talk a little bit
about Sandra? Sorry.
And could you just set up for people, what's between a dilemma that we see in Australian Survivor and something that might be considered like a twist in U.S. Survivor?
Well, they have a lot of twists in Australian Survivor. It's actually funny because I'm going to give you all these ideas, and then Nick and I were also going to do a think tank for Australian Survivor and fix that anyway. So we're not perfect, but for dilemmas, we often have in Australian Survivor, yeah, like cookies versus wood. They gave it to both tribes, very different outcomes. It kind of became this like really beautifully simple narrative and duality. And that's all it took. Well, I'm going to use cookies for strategic purpose. And they did. And there was a lot there. So that kind of thing, I think, has a lot more value and emphasis in Australian Survivor than in the US. It doesn't always have to be an idol. It can be something like lollies. I don't know if you guys have the word lollies. We have the word lollies. And that becomes a narrative touch point.
And I think like, When you're doing these rewards and stuff, it comes back to like creating those human moments. People have been recast on the show because of something as easy as cookies, or even the incident in Heroes versus Villains with Danielle, Amanda, and Colby. That's such a simple moment, but it's over an idol clue, but it's small. And like, they keep trying to expand this to a point where like, you can't even as a viewer figure out what's going on. And really, some of the biggest moments in Survivor history are based on who took you on a food reward or who let you have that night at a spa. And now that's kind of been thrown out the window because we don't even see half the rewards. I mean, Lauren, how many rewards did we not see on your season?
5. You didn't see 5. And they did. There's so much blowback from that. But I was going to say, even Sandra eating the sugar, look at the firestorm that started. And how much info, just that one moment of her sitting there. Yeah, I think, too, with a lot of the twists and stuff, there's not enough time to show those moments, unfortunately, and we need more. So give us 2 hours of Survivor.
And I agree with Phil. The best stuff, the most memorable stuff, the iconic stuff is not necessarily in the complicated. That the more simple the story is, the easier it is to tell and the easier it is to get or to raise above the noise that everybody else has going on in their lives. One of the best moments from Survivor in the 30s is Angelina just asking Natalie, Natalie, can I have your jacket? Can I have your jacket? Over a jacket. There was more drama that came from a jacket than all of these idols and advantages that came out of the game. And it's just the simplest story. And you could just, it's such a great, simple moment in the show.
the most iconic moment in the history of the show is Rob Mariano asking Lex, can you take care of Amber? That is just so small. Like there's no chaos to that. There's no idols. There's no anything. It's just him saying, hey, can you take care of her? And he does. And we see what that has led to. I mean, that has changed so much of Survivor because we've seen Boston Rob how many times? And like, we haven't seen Lex and Rob and Amber. Like, and it was, there was no production interference in that. It was just a regular moment that we just don't see anymore.
Right. Can I also go back to, Lauren, what you touched on with there were five rewards in your season that we didn't get to see. The reward challenges, I think, are ultimately a waste of time normally. But I have an idea of how we can improve both. I think another problem with Survivor is I think that we tribe swap too much. I think that we have our starting tribes, and that's good. And I think that when we've started to do more two tribes of 10, I think that is the better way to go, or two tribes of 9 as opposed to three tribes. Again, the more we spread out, the harder it is to tell our stories. But when we have two tribes of 10, we get started and then we swap. And now who knows who's on what's tribe that we podcast about the show, all of us. And sometimes that we have to say, wait, who's on which tribe? What is it? And if it's hard for us to remember, it's almost impossible for the people at home. And everybody's a little bit checked out until we get to the merge. But what if we ended up not having tribe swaps in a season? But hear me out. We have rewards like we would after the merge, where the reward combatants are mixed up. Okay? So now you go on a reward with people from the other tribe, and then you go back to your tribe. And so all of this mix-up that we're hoping for so we don't get pagonged at the merge could be happening. And who knows what sort of crazy stuff people are going to try to, oh, let me give an idol to this person on the other team. And you could even have an idol. You have to give it to somebody on the other team like we had on the Australian Survivor from this past year. But we could have this interaction take place and then have the rewards matter and have people be getting mad. Oh, why did you go on that? We're creating drama. And then also we're able to just continually tell the story of each individual tribe, because when a tribe is formed, it's their own little society, and it's fun to get to see how that develops over 19 days in terms of like how they conduct their business versus the other tribe. And then when we have the merge, everybody has known each other because they've played in challenges and gone on rewards together.
Yeah, cross-tribal interactions are really fun. I mean, Survivor New Zealand had the Outpost, which was an island where one person from each tribe would go and either have a challenge or some sort of thing that they would share the secret or share that experience. And I mean, I think we've seen it as well when two people went to Exile Island. That was fun. I think Island of the Idols kind of missed an opportunity to have people go one from each tribe. I think anytime that you can be, as you said, the idol will talk about from Australian Survivor that you could only use it for the other tribes, you have to swap it. Anything that can get people across tribes interacting, I think is extremely fun.
Okay. And then you ready for this, Alexa? Then we do the auction pre-merge and you have a partner from the other tribe. You're in twos, you're in pairs, and now you're bidding against people from your own tribe. Their people are getting mad at you in your own tribe, and you have a partner that you're splitting the rewards with.
I love that. I think that a lot of people talk in the Google Sheet that we sent around, a lot of people talked about the summit from Survivor Millennials vs. Gen X, and everyone said, well, that was kind of cool, but now
nothing
what?
Happened.
Yeah. Nothing happened. I think they fed them. So I think if you have the summit fairly consistently and change it from a summit to a reward, or change it from a summit to an auction, I think that's great. I think one of the best alliances to never happen was the Exile Alliance from Survivor Token Chains. And that would have been so cool. And it didn't end up happening. And now... Exactly. And if you can build relationships with people but not actually be on the tribe with them, I think I love that.
And Rob, going back to your first season in Survivor of the Amazon, when Jenna and Dave got together for their one night, and then at the end, they actually picked new tribes.
Yeah.
If instead of doing like where you're picking new tribes, but like every time they're like, that's a once weekly thing, or maybe once every other week, two people are going from the tribe and they're not doing just the youngest, but somebody's going and maybe they're picking for the auction and they're making the pairs, or so, like every time maybe they're kind of doing something, and sometimes it turns out to be nothing, except it's kind of ranking in the other tribe's mind where people stand on the opposite tribe, or sometimes it actually does have a great impact on the game, and you've now made the tribes for the next reward challenge or for something.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. What I love about stuff like this is that, you know, we've had a lot of this more like probably in the first half of Survivor as opposed to much beyond Heroes versus Villains, where people going to the other tribe and then going back to their original tribe. I just watched an episode of Survivor China this week where you have to spend a day with somebody from the other tribe, but mixing it up and sort of like changing up that element and people bringing information back. I think that's all interesting, small things that you're able to do to be able to create drama and not necessarily complicate the game by bringing more stuff into it.
And Lauren, you correct me, but I feel like we're at a point where you can almost anticipate a swap coming. You know, it's vote, swap, vote, swap.
There are ways. Vote, merge. Yeah. You start to realize when you're getting mic'd up how you're doing it. Are you taking your bag? Are you leaving your stuff? You start to recognize the patterns of when you're going to swap. But yeah, I like all of these ideas. These are great.
Yeah. And I think I was just going to say too, with the kidnapping, we saw that in a lot of the early season. I think it ended in China, but that was a great twist because that is what created all of the, we don't trust Rupert anymore. And that was, I think, the first season we saw that, but that created so much drama, and it was one person going to the other tribe. They didn't have a swap in that season, but there was still enough interaction. It's one of the best post merges in Survivor history because of that.
Okay. Do we have another thing that we want to talk about? Because I have something else that we could throw out.
I have so many things should change. No. well, I mean, one thing there's a few things just in terms, this is less ideas and more just like concept changes. Because I think we touched on this with fire tokens, but I think no more surprises for me is a big one. I think greater transparency in general. If you look back at the past few seasons, like Island of the Idols, Robin Sandra, that was meant to be a secret. Edge of Extinction and the fire tokens and that mechanism of Windows at War was a secret. Then in Edge of Extinction itself was a secret in season 38. Season 37, the nullifier was unknown. Season 35, fire was unknown. There's so much happening lately that the players have no actual understanding of. How can they play around that? So I think we did touch on that with the fire tokens, but I just want to reiterate, since it does seem to be happening pretty much every season at this point, for me, a big thing would be let the players know the game they're playing. Don't surprise them just for the shock value and see how they can maneuver around that.
Okay. Lauren, I want to talk about something that I know is probably something that you don't feel too fondly about, but let's talk about, a lot of the people wanted to hear us talk about the final four fire making and whether or not it belongs in the show still. Now, I will be the first to admit, I thought that there was great drama in season 40 between Tony and Sarah. I thought that Chris Underwood versus Rick Devins in the fire making was also was very compelling. Lauren, tell me that should have we seen it all? Have we done everything with Final Four fire making, or can it be improved?
I think we've seen enough. I'm not just saying this because I am season 39's fire loser. I just feel that it's done. It's tired. If they want to keep the fire making, let's have the final four, have two of them win their way in, and then have these two go against each other. This whole idea of one person winning their way in and picking the other two, or let's just go final two. I don't like that idea. Or maybe having all three of the people win their way into the final. I might have had a shot on my season if that were the case. I just think I genuinely want to know, like, after seeing it so many times, I feel like Chris Underwood probably did one of the most shocking, crazy things with fire. But what more is going to come from the fire making challenge?
I agree with you. I am not a fan of it. And I understand the argument of, you know, the fourth place finisher just get voted out, and that person should have won and they just get voted out. But Shannon, you had mentioned that there were some really, really crazy and really, really good final four votes that would not have happened in American Survivor. And I candidly don't know about them, but it sounds like there is a way for the final four vote to still be very, very compelling and very dramatic without needing to force a fire making twist.
Yeah, I mean, it can be so compelling. Like, we've had 3-2-1-1 votes in four-person votes in international since fire-making was introduced in the US. And every time it happens, I'm like, well, the US is never going to get this. And it's never had one in its history, and it never will unless it's pre-merged in a four-person tribe. And that can feel really frustrating because for me, I mean, I think for anyone, most people listening to this podcast are probably here for a lot of the strategy. And, you know, I think for me, I just want less of that physical competition or competition in general, which is fire-making, and more the votes and the strategy. And that's always been the most compelling thing for me. I also agree with Lauren that we've seen it all. I know that Sarah and Tony was so compelling. I know that, you know, Chris Underwood, that was compelling. Dom giving it up and not making fire. We've seen a lot of that. I don't know how much more we're going to get out of it. And I do believe we can get a lot more out of final four votes. So I'm forever in team, get rid of it. Forever.
I also want to add that, like, sometimes you do get it also. That there's a lot of seasons where yeah. it ends up 2-2, yes. and you have a final four fire making. So it's not like, oh, well, there goes final four fire making forever. No, you kind of still have it like every other season.
And yeah, and that's the compelling part of it. Like, that's the compelling part of Rock. Vote,
not that sometimes randomly we have a Final Four Fire Making mm-hmm. challenge.
Yeah, well, yeah. Exactly. But like, in terms of going to Rocks, I've always said the most interesting thing is how do they get to the point where they're going to Rocks, where they're putting their whole game and their whole life in the game in a bag, you know, putting their hand in a bag for their fate. That's crazy. How did we get there? That's what's interesting, not as much as the Rock draw itself. So yes, watching people go to put themselves up in fire making, that's compelling to me way more than actually the fire making.
Mm-hmm. And Lauren, I think in your final tribal council, it was Jamal who said, we've now had every single version. Mm-hmm. We've had the winner win individual immunity, go on. We've had the winner taken. We've had the winner win the fire making challenge. So we actually have seen it all. Mm-hmm.
And I think what Shannon just said too is really accurate to this, because what's more interesting, knowing that Wendell's going to face off against Angela, and so it's either, you know, like that's okay, that's there, or when Bob and Maddie actually go at it because Sugar has a breakdown on day 38 before deciding who to vote for. Like, that's more compelling to me, because it's like, all right, is she going to do it? Is she not going? Like, there's drama around it, where in season 39, the whole drama was, is it going to be Lauren versus Tommy, or is it going to be Lauren versus Dean? Like, and that's not as compelling as, is there,
well,
actually?
I think it robbed, Nora made it funny, but yeah.
It robbed us too of that final tribal moment. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I think that it sucks that the fourth place person is the person that becomes the biggest threat. And it's like, I don't know. It just feels like there would have been so much more weight on either Tommy and I going against each other, or Tommy and I duking it out in the final tribal and really saying, well, what's up? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think this brings us into a category of things where, you know, another big thing that has sort of, you know, not been pushed a little bit to the back burner is that the issue of that a woman has not won U.S. Survivor in 3 years. We are on 6 seasons in a row with a male winner. I think that there are a lot of factors. I think that the idol part of it, I think, has been very much explored, and I think to a large degree addressed by the show, that it really got brought to the forefront by Angelina. I think that the show has gone to a lot of lengths to try to make it more of an equal playing field in terms of women finding the idols. But I think that the big three are, we have with the final four fire making, maybe it's a big two, the final four fire making, and then also the final jury format, I think also ends up leading to a lot of piling on at the final tribal council, and a lot of the like, but what did you do? What's your show me? Tell me everything you did. Where I think that the social game, which I think is the strength of a lot of female players in the game, not to say that it's always women with better social games, but I think that a lot of the female winners that you won, when you look at a lot of the great female winners, they have incredible social games. And I think that that part of the game has been minimized by the final tribal council format, which instead of a more personal interaction of one-on-one questioning, you get sort of the whole group of the scrum of like, but what did you even do? Come on. Like everybody just yelling at one person.
Can I add to that, Rob?
Yes, please.
Big juries. These big juries. Big juries. That that definitely contributes. I mean, Danny had never met Tony. You know, I love Tony as a winner, but she was, you know, in awe of his game, which she watched from the jury bench because it was a big game to watch from the jury bench. And, and a lot of these people, if you haven't met Edge of Extinction as well, hadn't met some of the players, of course, the bigger game, the flashier game is what's going to kind of take precedence over, you know, the social game where your skill set is in living with someone and making them happy. You've never lived with them, or you've hardly lived with them. So that becomes way diminished. And I would agree with all of this. I often get the question, why does fire making hurt women's chances in the game? That doesn't make sense. Women have as much ability to make fire as men. And I agree with that. And I think how I try to explain that is what fire making does, what bigger juries do, possibly the new final tribal format, certainly final threes over final twos, extra idols and advantages, re-entry challenges where a physical player can come back into the game. What does that do? It just puts more emphasis on competition, finding things, making fire, winning challenges. That competition aspect starts to override the social strategic aspect, which can hurt women. Not always, but it can. So that's why fire works into that, even though it doesn't really seem like it should hurt women. It should be fair. It just kind of puts that emphasis on competition. And I think bigger juries as well, things like that really do work into that as well.
Something that I realized just a couple days ago too, is like there have been 27 all newbie seasons, 27. They have 8 of them have been won by women. Like that shows that there is some sort of flaw here in what's going on, because like Shannon just said, like they can make fire just as well. Like they should, like any twist that's being put in there almost feels like it's going against, because out of those right. 8 as well, 5 of them came pre Heroes versus Villains. So we've only seen it 3 wow. times since Heroes versus Villains where a woman has won an all newbie season. That's incredible.
I think also, it was one of the things that Shannon had mentioned, final two versus final three. I think that a majority of the women winners come from seasons with final two versus final three. I think that that is also another big one. Let me throw something else out here at the panel for final three versus final two. I know the show loves to get it to a final three. But this is something we always have, either the zero vote finalist, maybe if it's a miracle, a one vote finalist in third place, the jury vote. You get to the final three, you go to the final tribal council, and we have either before the final tribal council or after the final tribal council, the jury's going to vote somebody out of the final three. The person who doesn't belong here out of this three, and we get it to a final two from a final three.
I think the biggest problem with that is it could result in a jury being angry at somebody and then voting them out despite the fact that they played like maybe the best game.
But they're not going to win. How would they win then?
Well, that's true. But I'm thinking like let's say there's a 9-person jury and it's like a 5-4, or like in the Dom and Wendell situation, you know that that's how it's going to be. So maybe you get on board and you say, I really want Dom to win. We should not vote out Laurel. We should vote out Wendell. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I worry that they could try to game that.
Yeah.
Because they're already at Ponderosa talking to each other about every little thing. If you think, I want Wendell to win. How can I make sure Wendell wins? Maybe I should vote out Dom because he's going to get 6 votes. And if we can do like a plurality vote here to vote out Dom, I just worry that it gives too much power to them to vote somebody out.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I don't love that is because I think it works in the same mentality as the show has for a few things that is not good for the show, which is a lot of what the show is trying to do is trying to make better winners or try to counteract a winner that they don't like. I mean, we have fire because Adam won over David, right? We have this new Final Tribal Council format because Michelle won over Aubrey. We have a final three to begin with, I think largely in part because Terry Dietz came third, didn't make it to the final two. So the show, I think, tries too much to shoehorn the winner that they want in, and to a large extent it's working if you see the type of winners that they've had recently, but to me that's not what I want. I'm happy to, as I've said a million times, as much as I love David Wright, I'm happy that he had the story that he was meant to and it wasn't kind of manufactured for his win. So I think the show just needs to let go a little bit of the outcome that they want. Something like this would probably be, you know, maybe helping out the outcome that they want. Vote someone off the jury is going to get 0 votes, help a better winner from their perspective, but I don't think that's necessary. I'd like to just see a vote. I'd like to just see the game play out, and whatever winner we get is the story that we're being told, and just tell that story really well.
Okay.
And just to go back to the larger juries and the jury discussion rather than the one-on-one questions, I think as much as it adds to, you know, one person just gets piled on, the final three loser just gets piled on. There's also, I feel like over half of the jury doesn't talk. I think it also benefits the people who do, you know, are very aggressive in their questioning or are very angry about a certain situation. I loved the soapbox. I loved standing up there and just nailing into the person who voted you out. And you know what? That was really good TV. And perhaps that resulted in a more bitter, it could be more bitter, but I don't really believe in bitter juries. That was way more compelling to watch.
You're right, because that if I go back to the last six final tribal councils, I'm trying to think of one iconic, memorable moment, and it escapes me right now. I can't think of one sort of like iconic survivor moment that has come from those, where maybe the most iconic moment in the history of the show comes from that one-on-one jury questioning when Sue Hawk is laying into Kelly.
And I think it creates... Oh, go ahead, Shannon.
Oh, I was just going to say, last year, Survivor South Africa had the new jury, the old jury format. And it really crystallized to me, it's like how much I dislike the new one, because there were so many iconic moments and it was so heated. And I agree that as someone who doesn't like the new format and who also doesn't like big juries, I think the combination of the two is just deadly. We had a new final tribal council format and a 5-4 vote in Australian Survivor a couple of years ago. And one of the people in the five hadn't even spoken that we saw in the jury. And I was like, her vote was so important. Like, it was a 5-4. We should get the perspective of every juror, especially when it's a close vote. So I think that that big jury and then silencing people and necessarily silencing them because it's such a big jury in this new final tribal format is bad for the show.
And I don't think it gives the opportunity for the people who are maybe going to vote for the person that they believe should win, but isn't going to get enough votes. So let's say in the instance of Tommy versus Dean, if it's 7-2 final vote, anybody who is voting for Dean doesn't really get the chance to defend why Dean should win the game over Tommy, because the majority is always going to be louder than the minority. Like, that's just how it always is. And this completely just feeds into that.
That was something that I found to be very unfortunate about our jury specifically, because like you guys said, once you go back to Ponderosa, that's a whole nother game. And a lot of people, when we were about to do the final vote, someone looked at me and they were like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, because they didn't get to speak. And there were a lot of moments that you guys didn't see, but like even Janet, she was like, can I ask a question? It's like for herself, she played the game as well. She deserves to have her moment or talk with Tommy and ask him whatever she wanted to ask him. But a lot of people were left. And even me, it almost felt like they felt like they were having a moment and they were like going to collectively do this thing against one person, which we saw was to be Nora. And a lot of people's voices and opinions weren't heard. And I think you even saw that too, where I think Aaron said something to Tommy, like, we don't want to hear what you have to say. And then a lot of people were like, wait, actually, we do want to hear what you have to say. Yeah. And I think it's important that everyone's voice is heard.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on final tribal council format?
We went a lot of different ways on that one.
I think it was all very productive and great stuff. But Lauren, speaking of people's voices being heard, one of the things that came up quite a bit in season 40 was just how much people are getting up and moving out of their seat at tribal council and whispering. Yeah. And sometimes we are able to see a vote change on the fly. Certainly that did happen at points in season 40. But the question is, what does Survivor need to do, if anything, about just how much action is happening at Tribal Council, leading to a lot of confusion in the minds of the viewers?
I just think get better microphones so you can hear what's going on in the background. Yeah. I know a lot of viewers are having a hard time because it's like you're missing a lot of what's going on. But I also think that it's something that has to happen. I feel like you can't put all your cards out on the table. You don't want to tell everybody, okay, this is my true alliance. And I think by getting up, it does create another element to tribal that may not have otherwise been there. It allows paranoia to set in. It's like, okay, wait, why is this person talking to this person? It does reveal alliances. It definitely did that for me. When our tribal blew up and everyone started getting up, I noticed Dean and Tommy, and I had never noticed that before until that moment when all that pandemonium, and they were super clicky and talking. As a player, I like it. As a viewer, I can understand how it's frustrating. So I just say get better mics.
So can you just talk that through a little bit more, Lauren? So that, that in your season, that big tribal that blew up, that was at when Karishma got voted out. Is that the final eight?
That was when Karishma, it was after family visit. There was all that blowback. Nora was upset that she didn't get to go on family visit. And there was all of this whispering going on. And Tommy and Dean were sitting next to one another and they were whispering. And I hadn't ever seen them as a duo. Like when the show played, I was like, oh, so this is what was going on. And I know in that moment is when I noticed it. Like, why is Dean so keen on saving Tommy? And that moment when they were having their little whispered side conversations, that's when I noticed that that was a thing. I like it. I think that it's something that has to be done because I don't want to tell people. I'm not just going to outwardly say okay, for Winners at War, I didn't like how they were like, okay, well, there's five of us here, so let's just say what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not fun. Who wants to see that? Like that. And then that feels like there's one group that is absolutely controlling a game. This is a game. We want it to be spontaneous. And I think when you put that kind of line in the sand, it just doesn't make it as interesting. So I think people should be able to hear what we're saying.
But when there's whispering, it's never a blindside, right? Like, if there's whispering, it could be any of you. That's chaos. Like, for me, the best vote in Winners of War was a Sophie boot because there was no whispering. It was deadly. It was a sniper shot because it was a blindside. So for me, like, I feel like there's a hierarchy of what the show should want. Like, best case scenario, no whispering. It's either a blindside or someone has to tell their plan out loud. Like, if it wasn't allowed, but the vote is still being changed, that to me is best case scenario. You still get the intrigue of the vote being changed, but you do it publicly or you do it as a blindside. You have an interesting vote without the whispering. Middle case scenario, you do get the vote being changed, but you have to whisper. Worst case scenario, because they can't whisper, it's a boring vote. They didn't have time to do it. No one can kind of call an audible and it's just boring. So for me, I actually think it's probably worth it at this point to just try one season. Let's ban the whispering. Let's see where it goes. Do we get more blindsides? Do we get more people saying their plan publicly? Do we still get the interesting votes without the whispering? Or does it go back to more boring votes because people don't have as much strategic leeway? I'd like to at least see where it goes for a season, now that whispering is kind of part of the lexicon. And then if it doesn't work, we go back to whispering.
I, as a viewer, just am like completely numb to it at this point. I think that's the biggest problem. It doesn't shock me anymore. And I think the only time that it's actually changed a vote was Julia Carter. I think that's the only time we've really seen it impact. He went home. And Lauren, I know you said you learned alliances there, but as a viewer, I'm just like, oh gosh, now I got to watch these 4 minutes and then it'll be over. Okay, good. It's almost over. Like, that's how I feel whenever it happens.
Yeah. And Tony says that the Kim vote got changed at Tribal Council also in this past season. So I do think it does. it does come up, but I just wonder, okay, so Lauren, you're saying that the players need to be able to do it. Shannon, you don't want to see it. Is there a way, could they control it maybe a little bit more? Like if somebody gets up, maybe could we have it like one time during a tribal council, Jeff says, all right, I'm going to let this go on for 1 minute and then everybody has to sit down. Like, it seems like that Jeff is just very happy to organically let it play out until its natural conclusion and then sort of be like, all right, are we done? Are we ready? Where I wonder, maybe could he be like a little bit more like in, like if it's a baseball game, there's like a conversation going on the mound for too long that they got to like, all right, let's break this up. All right, everybody, come on, let's get back to the seats.
I think timing it is a good middle ground because I, as a viewer, don't like to watch it, but Lauren, as a player, likes to play it. So get good mics. Because the reason I don't like to watch it is because I have no idea what's going on. So if I can have some context, and then also I like cutting it off, but at the same time, I could see how that could accidentally get someone sent home who shouldn't have gotten sent home. So I don't know if that's the way of the game. But to your point, Rob, Jeff sometimes will just, he'll let it go. And I do like there being a stopping point at some point.
Lauren, I do feel like that if Jeff is sort of like even nudgingly like I disapprove of this, I do think that it would start to die down.
Absolutely. And actually with Shannon saying that, I think if it was a no whispering whatsoever, it could be cool to see how people try to do sign language or communicate. So I do like that because it could be funny, you know, like people making eyes at each other, reading lips, who knows. But I think that
it's, you're right. When I think about it too, you're right. The vote didn't change, even though we were whispering. So now you got me like changing my mind over here, Shannon. But I just think as, a,
did
as
change.
A player, but as a, my vote's changing, yeah. But as a player, I would be pissed if I couldn't whisper. I'll say but, that. Like I would be mad.
So I think at the very least subtitle it. I mean, it's crazy that they're not doing that anyway. But only one part of my issue is that I can't hear it or understand what's going on. That is a big issue. But I also just feel like it gives the players, it makes it a little bit easy for them. Like, what would they do? No offense, Lauren. Like, I mean, as you said, the vote didn't change. But isn't that a little bit easier to be like, well, we can whisper at tribal? If you couldn't whisper, you'd have to do one of two things. Either risk your whole game by saying something out loud at tribal, which is very interesting from a viewer perspective, or get your ducks in a row for an awesome blindside before tribal council, which is also fascinating. Like, both of those things are more interesting to me. Or worst case scenario, it's just a more boring vote. I'm willing to risk the more boring vote for those two better outcomes for me. At least for a season to see how players do in this post-whisper era. Ban whispering for a season, and if it does lead to a bunch of boring votes, we can put it back, we could subtitle it, but I'd like to see it taken away from the players. It's a little bit of a crutch, and I think that, you know, we should work a little harder.
Yeah, that is absolutely fair. I definitely think that it is a crutch because you're not putting all your cards on the table. But yeah, I think it would be cool for someone to be like, well, I'm voting this person out. So my alliance, if you want to come with me, do it. And that would create, as a viewer, that would create amazing TV. So yeah. You're making a believer out of me over here, Shannon.
Shannon, can I just also ask you, how do the international editions of Survivor deal with the whispers? Does it just not come up?
Definitely not as much of a thing. I think it doesn't exist as much in the culture, unless I'm like missing some things in my mind. I have taken like a month off Survivor, so I'm a little bit hazy on some stuff. But yeah, it definitely isn't just as big a part of the culture, which if you think about it, I mean, it didn't exist until Game Changers, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like, I mean, it's definitely something that like Henry was trying to do in Australian Survivor, he being like the JT Australian alternative, but it just takes one person to kind of push it into the culture and make it a really big thing. I don't think it's reached international as much, but we're always just like, you know, one step behind you guys. I'm worried about where it's going in terms of it being as big a thing here.
I have one quick question about the whispering. Lauren, I've always wanted to know this. How bad does everyone's breath smell? I've always been.
Next time you see Tommy, ask him how many times I told him his breath smelled every single day. Like, disgusting. But honestly, you get to a point where you don't notice it. When our families came to family visit, they were like, you guys smell god awful. And my husband was talking to me and I'm like grabbing everything. He's like, don't you want utensils? I'm like, can you stop talking to me? I'm trying to eat. But yeah, you don't notice it. After a while, you don't. Some people, woo, but you don't notice it.
About this whispering though, I think Shannon was right with the, it doesn't really create as much, it doesn't create crazy blindsides. Like, it's actually reducing blindsides. If this was a thing that was allowed from the beginning of Survivor, James Clement's not getting voted out with two idols because he's going to know, because people are going to get up and whisper, and it's going to ruin more Mormons than it's going to help. But one thing that needs to change, and this is a shout out to Kellen, is if they are going to ban whispering, they need to put women in the back row every other mm-hmm. episode, or they need to make it more random, because that's another thing. I think Kim Spradlin did this to her advantage in Winners at War. I think she did this as a strategy because she wasn't able to see what was going on, and the whispering died after Kim was voted out. She couldn't see what was going on, so she had to get up and whisper. If you mixed it up every time and it was a random order and you never knew whether you were the shortest guy or the tallest woman, if you were going to be in the front row, the back row, whatever it was going to be, that would create a lot more strategy at camp. It would prevent the whispering, and it would be interesting to see how people communicate with each other and if they're able to.
Love that.
I got to a point at Tribal where I would just look down at the ground because I'm so expressive. I didn't want Jeff to ask me a question. And I think it would be great if at Tribal they did mix up the seating. That would, because I think a lot of the times, you know, Tommy's just sitting there twiddling his thumbs and I'm pissed, like, because I'm right on the front lines, you know, and he's just like, do-do-do-do-do. And I always knew that I was going to be right in the front and in the center. And I think that's something that's a really good point, Phil, because it would be nice to switch that up for sure.
And Kim is like 9 feet tall. She has no business sitting in the front row. I remember, I think it was Allison from David vs. Goliath would occasionally sit in the back. But I think, I don't know what the reasoning is. I don't know if it's a height thing, but there are plenty of tall women or short women who should be sitting in the back.
I think they should just make it like a circle, everyone staring at each other, and Jeff just right in the middle. I know that would work for TV, but just looking at each other.
But he's on a spinning thing.
Spinning and spinning around. Okay. I'm going to ask him a question, then it comes back to, yeah, I like that.
Okay.
So nauseous.
Any other things that currently exist in Survivor that we would like to discuss and or tweak?
If we go back to idols for a little bit, what they should do a little more is limit the power of idols. So if we can't have fewer idols, which they seem to really not want to do, which they should do, but I think there's some fun things they could do with limiting idol power. So for example, you found an idol, but you can only use it for someone else. Time limits, I think, has been a good addition. Obviously making the idols more difficult to find. Even things like clues. Going back to the genius, there's a thing called scamming horse race. You each get a clue of which horse has won a theoretical horse race. And it's like a puzzle. And there's more clues that you can find out. You can kind of put it all together. So does someone else have a clue that makes sense to your clue? And then you need to work together more. I just think kind of like limiting the power of clues and idols. As we've said from International Survivor, there were two idols that people found on either tribe that could only be used for the other tribe. They have to make a switch that, encouraged cross-tribal collaborations. It could also, they also tricked each other. There was so much good TV that came out of that. So I think if we take these advantages and just kind of limit the power, but actually make them more interesting and clues as well, I think that could be really interesting.
So,
and look how that worked out. Sorry, Rod. How that worked out for Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. That brought Chrissy and Ryan together the whole game.
Exactly.
If I could give the counterpoint to less powerful idols, I think that what ends up happening is that when we have less powerful idols, that I feel like then the idea is like, oh, okay, well, this idol's not that powerful, so we could have five or six things in the game that aren't really that powerful.
But they have five or six now anyway. Well, they just are all powerful.
I think that, maybe that's a point to that if you're going to have things, make them less powerful, but I just think that overall, that at what cost are each of these things going into the game? It's one less story that you get to tell for every single time that we go on a hunt to have a reveal for a thing. And I think that overall, I do think that screen time ends up, first off, I think a lot of times either the thing that gets put into the game ends up having a person leaving the game because of just deus ex machina of like, okay, oh, they had the thing, I lost, which is a story that is not a satisfying story for the viewer. And then also, the more we're spending time either A, finding the thing, or B, planning how to use the thing, or C, trying to guess who has the thing. None of those things are super compelling stories that we love to see on our television, and they just take away from the stuff that I think are the important stories that the great storytellers who want to make this show, they want to tell the stories of people, not stories of inanimate objects, unless it's Ghost Island.
What about if the objects facilitated those stories of people? Like, for example, I think this is the problem with international Australian Survivor versus US, is we do have so much more time, so we can kind of invest in the stories of both things, hopefully people and objects. But is there any reason that the idol that you find shouldn't be for the other tribe? Like, could you just replace the current idols with idols where you can only use it for the other tribe, so you have to make a switch? Like, that obviously limits the powers of the idols. You're finding as many things, and it just, like, the juice was so worth the squeeze in Australian Survivor. It was such a compelling storyline. Get into the hands of the right player, and you're finding out way more about that player. It's facilitating that character story.
I'm very bored of the hunt. I loved the Tommy and Dean flipping over chickens, and then they flipped over the thing, and then they got on a swing and they opened this. That was such a fun idol hunt. Before that, I cannot name an idol hunt that excited me. So I don't know what the answer is, but putting more emphasis on the clues, and maybe, Shannon, I can only get a clue from you because you're on the other tribe. Maybe there's a way to kind of meet in the middle with that.
Well, I also love the David versus Goliath, the merge idol, with which was, you know, in the picture. So yeah, that's why I'm saying something like that, something that encourages collaboration, as we're saying, and something that can be more like a mind puzzle. I think that would also validate some other skills that we maybe enjoy more, some mental skills. It would hopefully make it a bit more even across the genders, because it's not so much who's like going out and gathering things. It's more who can work out the puzzle. And if it's something where you have to connect dots of the puzzle, it would also encourage collaboration. So that's why I think there could be something there for that.
Those examples that you mentioned were things that people were able to sort of like play along at home and sort of like, like, oh, no, Tommy, you're walking right over the thing. So that we kind of were able to sort of like get a sense of what they should have been doing.
And the half idol that creates a full idol that we saw with Ty and Scott and Jason, and we've seen that a couple times now, and it's becoming more of the norm. I'm still not completely sold on that because it's still not building up these characters. It really worked in the Ty situation, but it doesn't work every time. And I feel like again, going back to the older seasons when they were first introducing the idols and the hunt was real, you were creating characters based around these idols. And if you look at a season like Survivor Gabon, Sugar looked brilliant when she found that idol because Dan, the lawyer, couldn't find it. And so that built her as a character. And then when you have Survivor Micronesia and Suri and Kathy Sleckman are going back and forth, like it's fun to watch and it's enjoyable as opposed to Lauren O'Connell thought it was a sock. That's not fun to me. Like that does nothing for me. And then the half idols, it feels like they're forcing something because there's just not enough effort there in terms of wanting to make people go back and forth like crazy again, or wanting to make them really hunt for it so much anymore.
I will say with the half idols, especially on Winners at War, I found myself questioning who had what still. Who still had the other half of somebody else's idol, how that was going to be used. And then with the swaps and the merge and all of that, it was very confusing to keep up with who had what.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lauren, we were talking before we were recording about how much fun it was for your idol that you had to convince everyone not to do the challenge. And like something like that doesn't require Island of the Idols. Like, I know we don't have that much time, but that was one of the most fun segments to me of the whole season. What challenges can we give people to find things that, again, would validate some other skills, some social skills, some strategic skills that, again, hopefully would make it more even across genders as well, but also was just so entertaining.
It was probably one of the most fun days out there too. Like just something fun and exciting to do when you have this secret and
so fun. Knows,
but you're rewarding people with breakfast. It was fun and it reminded me of old school Survivor. And I would love to go back to that and those fun moments where people are bouncing off each other. And, you know, like you said, I love that you said, Shannon, like the gatherers and all of that, that you expect that those are the people that are finding them. But it's like, how about we add in a new element to it where it's more mental or whatever? I like that a lot.
One of the things that I think also ties into this as we're talking about, like, we have to, like, the show needs to be selective about what they're able to show or not show. I just think that this is the biggest no-brainer, and I don't really understand. I'm sure it has to do with economics and stuff that's way over, you know, what I know as a podcaster, but they have CBS All Access. They create so much. The other shows create so much content for CBS All Access. Even if you said, okay, look, we don't have time. We have 42 minutes. We can't get to everything. I'm sure there are versions of things that are longer. Well, why people, Survivor fans would, I think would subscribe to CBS All Access for either longer episodes or, you know, another 20 minutes a week of different scenes that we could see in addition. I know there are some things on there, but they're like a minute or two that you just have this. You have this vehicle of CBS All Access. I don't know why Survivor doesn't do more with CBS All Access.
I think it has to do with the fact that I think Survivor views that they have an older viewership, and this would be such a good way to get younger people into the show so that it keeps on lasting. Because like my mom and dad watch the show, but they're never going to go to CBS All Access. And I think they're kind of thinking that, okay, we're on CBS. We've been on for 20 years. We have a lot of day one fans who are now, you know, probably in their 40s, their 50s. Maybe they're not going to be looking at what's online, but these new fans who, you know, Rob, I'm sure you see it all the time where people will be like, I just started watching Survivor in season 39 and now I'm listening to a podcast. They're looking for other outlets. Mm-hmm. They're looking for ways to get this content. So they come to the podcast and things. And I think CBS All Access is really missing a huge opportunity there to, you know what, if the if certain people don't want to watch it, if a certain like age range doesn't want to watch that type of content, they don't have to. And it doesn't have to be the most integral part of the story, but it should still be something that at least develops the characters that we're watching.
Yeah, it goes right back to that character moments that we all crave. That's where we can get it. We can get that camp life, see how they're interacting, how they're actually living outside of all the craziness that Survivor creates. It would be cool to see that. And I think that's what people crave from old school Survivor. That's what I grew up watching. So that's what I want to see more of. It would be fun to go back.
Tying into all this, do we need to take a look at 20 people versus 16 or even 18? It seems like that Survivor is really dead set. It has to be 20 now every single season. I think the 20 people also makes it harder to tell individual stories. Is there any reason? Are there any pros of 20 people?
More people get to play. It's hard. Telling 20 stories is really hard. And I love 16 person cast because I feel like I actually know the cast and even the people who are not integral to the entire story. Yeah. You still have some stock in them. You still care.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Not to mention 20 with two people coming back into the game like we had this last season.
Well, we're eradicating that, right?
So. Yeah, that's gone forever. We're not even going to talk about that. That's gone. But I think what the problem with the 20 person cast is four people are not on the show. So why not just start with 16? And I'm not saying that you're always going to pick the right 16. We saw that in old Survivor 2 where there would be characters that just didn't click with the TV once they're out there. But if you have 16, you have more time to get to know the characters and really build them out as people. Whereas when it's 20, we've had a cast of 16 where every character is well developed. We've had a cast of 18 where every character is well developed. We have never had a cast of 20 where every character is well developed. And I don't think we ever will. You're constantly beating your head against that wall. It's never going to happen.
Yeah,
this was going to be one of my biggest notes from International in terms of, well, we have more people, but there's more time per person because there's so much time. But for me, one of the biggest problems with these huge cars is like the end game is so stacked and fast and like it goes missing. And for me, the slower end game of International has been really, really good. I think the final five vote from Survivor South Africa last year is one of my favorite votes ever. Same with Australian Survivor last year, the final five vote. The final six vote of Winners at War, something like that went totally missing. We don't get to analyze it. We don't get to dig into these votes that can be really compelling. So I think getting down to a finale of five or four people, you know, maximum with five, definitely not six with a returnee, you know, competition as well. Like, I think that would be way better for the show. I think that, you know, it's gotten way too stacked. And I think that they're scared about having something like a double boot in the pre-merge because of, you know, what if there's a medivac coming on? What if we lose too many people? I think don't be scared of it. If you lose a person, you get to a finale with a final four, you can have as compelling and comprehensive a finale at Winners of War and the reunion. I think that's not a bad thing. I don't think they should be so scared of you know, losing more players early or starting with fewer players, as you're saying.
They had probably almost as close as you can get to worst case scenario in Survivor Ko Rong of an 18 person season, and they had three medivacs. And you know what? They came out fine.
Yeah.
That Joe episode is a slog.
That Joe episode is a slog. No doubt. No doubt. I think there's like a...
They worked it out.
And it's like 5 days. Certainly. Certainly. I had to, you know, do seven podcasts about that one episode that week. So I have the scars on my body. But that being said, we all got through it. We all got through it.
We did.
So sure, you know, you could have a worst case scenario, but I think that again, like Shannon was saying, like I'm willing to live with the downside risk because I think that the upside is there on a smaller cast. And I know if you go to 18, it's harder to do. Well, how do you do? One tribe has five men and four women, and then the other tribe is vice versa. But you could do 16. You could do 16.
You could do 18 and have them pick their tribes and not make them pick based on man and woman. And I know that they've done that in the past. And pretty much every time that people pick strength, they end up picking the worst tribe. We've almost seen that every single time they've picked. So why not try that? You know, and I know we were trying to talk earlier about no swaps, but even if you do that and you're planning to swap after four boots or something, you can do that and know that it's not going to get to an oolong point. But back to Ko Rong, like, Ko Rong is one of those casts, when I was saying, that's 18 people. We know every one of them. That is a really well-edited season. I mean, we know every character there. And even Jodo Campa, who gets really knocked in the community, I think, you know him really early on because of him going head-to-head against Peter. I mean, his pre-merge is really good before he starts, like, falling apart. So I think 18's a really good number. I think 16's probably, like, the most, you know, the best number you're going to get. But I think 18 has proven to work in these newer seasons.
Okay.
I mean, isn't it crazy to think that the Cambodia Final Six was in the finale? Like, we deserved a week to talk about the first No Votes Tribal Council. Like, these things, obviously we did talk about it a lot and continue to, but these things go missing in these huge finales. I think that, yeah, they can definitely cut down the cast in general and, yeah, have it more even towards the end as well.
Okay. Are we ready to talk about new ideas of things that have been submitted to the panel by the listeners, things that we've brought to the discussion? Have we fixed enough things that we're ready to, okay, let's put some stuffing back in this turkey?
Yeah, we brought it down. We're going to build it back up again. That's kind of how it works, right?
I think that's the most important thing to take from that, though, is we took stuff out. It's out now. Like, the stuff we talked about is gone. This is not just adding on to the mountain. The mountain has shrunk a little bit. Yeah. Okay. That's what needs to be, you know, really focused in on here.
And all right, now let's build Mount Everest.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I really want to be positive tonight because I think that we all love the show so much. Everybody who's listening to this podcast or watching this video, they love Survivor too. We're all on the same team in this. We all want to see Survivor do well and prosper. It doesn't have to be our way exactly, but that we're all people that spend way too much time thinking about this, and so hopefully that this is a productive conversation for the big picture of Survivor. Okay.
Yeah, like Rob, you asked me to bring a positive, which was a good note. And my positive is that season 40 is my favorite season of the whole show.
Yeah.
You know, like, so as much as I can be critical of stuff, and I definitely am and have been, and sorry about that, like, how much do I love the show? That it's A, my whole life, and B, that the most recent season, I know there's a lot of other factors, all winners and stuff, but it really is, like, even with its flaws, it really is my favorite season of the show. Like, that's what it can bring. Like, the history that the show has, the perfect premise that it has, it is that great. That's why we workshop it. That's why we spend so much time thinking about it, only because there's so much value to be gained. So I hope everyone takes from that and doesn't tweet at us that we hate our life's work, because we don't.
Okay. All right. So let's open up this discussion. Of course, if you want to pitch us on something also during the live portion of the show, hashtag RHAP on Twitter. We'll also be able to take some of your YouTube comments as well. But let me open up the floor to new ideas, or as we like to say, what's going to Samoa, even though Survivor is permanently in Fiji?
Fling into Fiji.
I mean, I'll bring this one up. We referenced it. And we'd sort of referenced the beginning of this with Lauren, you convincing the entire tribe to go eat breakfast instead of participating in an individual immunity challenge. But, seems his or her name is Aiden. And the twist is called a bounty twist, and it's similar to what you did, but instead of that person needs to win in the immunity challenge, that person has to go home. So I don't know, maybe they take your vote away so that you're not automatically piling on. But what do you guys think about that? About they're calling it a bounty twist.
Okay. This comes up a lot in Sequester, right? That you get somebody that if this person, so hypothetically, Lauren, you end up getting, you get some sort of an advantage. Okay. If you vote out Nora this round, you get an advantage.
Would that work, though? Like, would people, I feel like a lot of the time people would just outright say no, because I mean, what advantage would be worth voting against your best interest, unless it works with your best interest? But I mean, yeah. And I think that would probably speak to the worst parts of Modern Survivor, that you're willing to get like an idol to vote against an ally. That would be crazy. Maybe people will do it and then they'll, you know, suffer for it. So that could be interesting. But yeah, I mean, it would be very finicky, but it's definitely interesting to talk about.
How would the selection go? Is it like, is there a wheel where you're spinning of all the tribe mates and then whoever it comes up, that's who the bounty is on?
It's the wheel that Jeff is sitting on as he's questioning. Yeah.
Jeff points at someone eventually.
Jeff on the lead to Susan. Yeah.
I love that.
Is it potentially...
Whoever Jeff vomits on when he has been spinning for 30 minutes.
Okay. Well, how about this? If we tweak this a little bit, whether the bounty isn't necessarily that you have to vote that person out, you have to cast a vote for that person to get the advantage.
And yeah, that's interesting.
I kind of like that, because that's the hardest part, is going to be how do you determine who's getting it? Because like, let's say we're at a vote where Jamal's going home. Everybody knows Jamal's going home. And that's also who your bounty says to vote for. And if you vote for him, then you get like, that's so easy. And then I feel like if Lauren were to get that later in the game when it's okay, now I got to convince everybody to vote Janet out and we don't have an idol nullifier. Like, let's say something like that happens. It becomes so much more complex as the game goes on. I feel like it would have to be something that is kind of even when selecting who the bounty goes on.
Yeah, I don't hate, you know, not getting a huge advantage, but some smaller advantage for putting your vote on someone. It's the kind of thing where the vote will be read. Who voted for this person? Why did you vote for this person? Yeah. It's the kind of thing you could conceivably do. Your vote might not have any impact. You would probably hope it's not having any impact, but you just kind of have to throw your vote, waste your vote to get an advantage. Is it worth it to you? What pandemonium can ensue? I don't hate that.
Lauren, what do you think of this? Basically, we're incentivizing a hinky vote at different points in the game to get an advantage.
I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I mean, if you're solid and strong within your alliance, I think it's great. I think it could really create a lot of problems, because let's say it does land on somebody. It lands on somebody's name, or you write someone's name down and then there's that one vote. And then it's like, let's say I put Phil's name down and then everybody's like, who voted for Phil? I think it's great. I think it would be a wonderful thing. And it would create a lot of drama around camp, especially if it's a name that's not up there, because then it's like, why, who wrote that and why? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of people that play the game would think like, what was obtained for that person, or why was that throwaway vote there?
Yeah. Okay.
No. Rob, I want to see if we can bring this, though. Bring in another one that I brought up a little bit earlier.
So that one's the last one. Okay, bounty vote. We're going to send it to Samoa.
Send it to Samoa.
No one's doing anything in Samoa.
Well, we can send it to Samoa. Is there a way to tweak that, though? I wanted to ask if we could tweak that a little bit, because there was another idea that I kind of wanted to see if there was a way to make it work. And if you can combine it with the bounty idea, maybe it can work. Somebody who didn't put their name said, if you vote for yourself successfully and are not voted out of the game, you get an advantage. So what if like the bounty was almost on your, like you find this advantage that says, if you can vote for yourself tonight, you will get some, and not an idol, but something smaller or something along those lines. So that, but like you have to have that advantage in order to be allowed to vote for yourself. So other people won't know who actually, like Lauren, you were saying, Phil gets a vote. Nobody will know that I voted for myself, and it'll be like, well, who should I not trust? And you can play that up, and that's part of the strategy. Meanwhile, I just got some sort of advantage by voting for myself. Is that something that could be worked with the bounty twist? Because that does give a reason for who the bounty is on, or is that too complex?
I almost like it better when you're voting for someone else, because I think that you actually suffer less for voting for yourself because no one else is angry at you. You know, if you send yourself home, you'd be the dumbest person of all time. So that one TV moment would be great, but probably unlikely. Whereas like if you've had to vote for someone else, say Lauren, the bounty was on Tommy. Tommy's probably close enough that you would have told him, but maybe he doesn't want you to vote for him. Or maybe it's someone else who you're less close with that you wouldn't tell, but you also wouldn't vote for. Like, I think that there's more stakes there because someone else is involved. Just keeping it to yourself, I think, is more of an easy out.
I agree. And I feel like that risk, it would be that one time you vote for yourself. That's going to be the time where someone has an idol and there's one more vote on you and then your ass is going home. So
that would be funny, though.
It would be funny. It would be great.
But
for us, it would suck. So yeah, I think that would be really risky. Yeah.
I mean, imagine Survivor Ghost Island, and at Ghost Island, Chris Noble gets that instead of what he got. And he does
vote himself out.
And he votes for himself. And it's literally the first ever like unanimous every single vote just went for Chris Noble, including his own, because he didn't think he was going home that night. Like, I don't know. It's just something to think about. But I do like the bounty idea. I was just wondering if there was a way to implement this whole idea of voting for yourself to be worthwhile, because I think if you just do that at random, it's too complex with voting for yourself. Too many people would do it.
I also love this idea of troubleshooting is like the Noble test. Like, what would Chris Noble do with this advantage? How could that go? Smart. I think that's a really fun way to test out how these advantages would go out in practice.
Lauren.
Someone just said in the chat, voting for yourself does put a target on you for future tribals. And that, I think that is true as well. Having your name on parchment is like, once people see that, ish. They really want, it's going to come again. So I think having your name on parchment as less as possible is the way to go, unless it's when you get to final three.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So bounty overall, we're going to send it to Samoa.
Yeah.
Try it out.
Okay. All right. That's one that we're going to try. All right. What else?
What about like an information advantage? So the advantage is you get information rather than an actual advantage. For example, you can ask if someone has an idol. Something that someone created that was fake in Survivor South Africa was finding out who people had voted for. That was a fake advantage that people fell for. But something like that that's less around an actual object that you get and you're actually given information as your advantage.
How would that work? Is there like a booth that you go to get the information?
Just talk to a producer, like, for my information, this is what I want to know. And I mean, it's a little bit board gamey. It's a little bit, you know, what we see with like maybe some of these online games that we play more than Survivor. But I just think it's interesting that it's like, it's something you've earned, but it doesn't have to be like an idol or something really physical.
Was this alluded to in in season 40's Edge of Extinction? Were you able to buy either information or something like that, but nobody followed through with it? I remember seeing a screenshot of
you could buy a letter to the Edge of Extinction.
Yeah. Okay, that was it.
You could send a letter from the game, proper game, to the Edge of Extinction.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Right.
People only cared about peanut butter.
I think there's something there. I think I'm trying to think, maybe the questions need to be structured a certain way, because if I want to know if Shannon and Rob are in an alliance, that could be...
Yeah, that's too vague.
Yes, so like, kinda. So maybe it has to be certain types of information.
But even still...
Who has an idol, even? That's something that's really concrete.
Is that something that we want the players to know of, like, who has the idol? Okay, Tony has the idol. And then would they find that because they have some sort of, like, information advantage?
Well, it's the kind of thing like where you had the nullifier, which was like a concrete way to nullify idols. This is a way that could help you nullify idols without actually nullifying it, which I think went too far. Just to have that information could be helpful. And you've earned it. You found it in some way, or you've won a challenge, or you've done something to earn it. It's not just like you get information for no reason, but it's just not as powerful as actually having something in your hands.
Look, I'm old school. You want information, you build a spy nest.
Yeah.
You get up in that tree, and you wait for people to come by the well, and you get your information.
Producers create a spy nest. Maybe that's what you find. You are entitled to one spy nest. Producers created for
I
you.
Love it.
Go up there. I don't know. Some way to get information.
A production created spy nest is honestly probably safer than a Tony one.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there a way that this could tie in with the extortion advantage, though? Because the extortion advantage was something that I really liked, but I didn't like the way it was executed, because I hated that it all came from Edge of Extinction because they had nothing to lose. And if this was something that came from in the game, where one player could say, like, hey, either you give me 5 fire tokens, or like the producers are going to tell me something about you, or somebody's going to tell me something about you, or, you know, like, I'm going to get some sort of information that you don't want to know. That could be something as simple as when you fill out the application, you put down like, what would people not know about, like, you know, anything like that. I saw that on that show Spy Games. I watched the first episode of it, and they had their little dossier, and in the dossier there was one thing that nobody would know about you, and they were all trying to figure it out the entire time. Like, even if it's not that, but, you know, it could be that you have an idol or something about you and you can extort somebody with it. Could that be a way to maybe navigate this?
Yeah, I also think, well, I think that it could work really well with fire tokens. It could be, okay, choose 3 people and you find out how many fire tokens they have. Mm-hmm. Then that could help you in other advantages and stuff like that. So something like that could be interesting.
I like that.
Yeah, I like the maybe a fire token count. It might be more interesting, but I definitely don't think that we should be like finding out people's secrets from before they came to the island. I feel like that your world on Survivor is what you choose to reveal to the other contestants, as opposed to having, because that Big Brother Canada also has done stuff like this, where it's like, oh, now we're going to reveal something that you told us in production, which is Survivor has never done that. By way of the production, and I think we should keep it that way.
Definitely.
Yes, I agree. I was just trying to think of how could you extort and make it so that you're always able to extort somebody rather than only if they have an idol. Because, like, really, Tommy in his season, Lauren, he would have had nothing to extort. he like it would have been like what that like nothing that you didn't actually help build the shelter. Like we all knew that. So like there was nothing that you could really extort from him.
Yeah. Great.
I have to throw shade at Tommy whenever I can because of him, I'll never play Survivor. So.
Oh, man. Okay. I want to say one more thing. Can I backtrack just a little bit about advantages? Having advantages late in the game, I think we sort of touched on this. But I don't know, fire with Janet and having it at Final Five. I just felt like it allowed the boys to go boom, boom, boom. This is what we're doing. And I knew about the idol nullifier as well. Why I didn't tell Janet is beyond me. I don't know what that would have done. But I think having that specific advantage that late in the game had too much influence. Whereas I feel like if that wasn't in there, there would have had to be a lot more gameplay, a lot more strategy. We would have seen more Survivor versus just, okay, this is what we're playing and Janet's going home.
Yeah.
And it was predictable tribal where it was like, we all knew. And then, you know, we told Nora and then it was like, okay, she's going home. And then it was me next. And then
they should be scrapping nullifiers and they should be scrapping advantages late in the game. And they should definitely be scrapping nullifiers late in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. It becomes a race more than actual Survivor. It's a race to find that advantage. I just think that that makes it really weird because even though how great the Dean and Tommy situation was, it's still a race. Like we know that that's going to be found. It's a little bit more fun if we don't know that something's going to be found. And it's more Survivor-y at the end of the game than, ooh, I hope that I find an idol at Final Five so that if the other three people have idols, then this person's going to go home because they don't have one. And I'm racing that person to find an idol.
I think that goes back to what Shannon was saying about letting go a little bit, just letting go just a little bit and letting it sort of play out and having the characters play out the game instead of foreshadowing everything.
Trust the cast.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, going to idol nullifiers, this is something that I saw that was in the Google form. And it actually came from Robert, and I didn't realize it came from Robert. Robert Guglielmo, our intern, and yes, on our app, you get your real names. We call our people intern. So our intern actually put this, and I didn't realize until I was just reading it. But he says a half strength immunity idol nullifies half the votes cast against you, saves you if the vote is close and you have some numbers, doesn't save you if it be unanimous. Would that almost be a better solution? I know this is kind of putting something back in, but would that be a better solution than the idol nullifier? Because it doesn't necessarily just always work for the majority of the alliance.
Nullify half the votes that were cast upon you?
So like in the
predetermined number?
It would be half the vote. So it's literally worth half the power of a regular hidden immunity idol when you were to sit down. So if Kelly Wentworth versus Andrew Savage, she would still be voted out at that tribal council because the idol she found was not a full idol. I'm just thinking of it in terms of not necessarily introduce this on top of everything they have, but if you really want something that can serve as some sort of nullifier, it's kind of like half idol nullifier, half idol, rather than having this idol nullifier, which I just personally really hate.
Yeah, I think what the trap I fall into and can be true of like the information advantages and things like that is like a lot of this would work really well in like, you know, the LRGs that pop up. But at the same time, like it is still a TV show that's 42 minutes. And like the problem is that it has been too complicated. So things like that, I think, are great. Like I've talked about how much I love the 50-50 idol. I'd love to see more of that. Mm. But that's, I think, even more a little bit more sleek because it's like you flip it, you have it or you don't. And there are strategic ramifications from that. Something like that, I wonder how much the viewers are for something like where it's nullifying half the votes. How much of is the average viewer counting, you know, and the mass of all of that? I know it's not that difficult mass, but maybe still too difficult mass for this like primetime TV show.
Yeah, I mean, we are sitting there, we're taking notes, we're watching this, we are all doing one thing. We are not multitasking during Survivor, but I do think that of the 7 million people that are watching the show, I would say 80%, 90% have something else going on. They're talking to somebody, they're chatting, they're on their phone, they're playing a game.
That pains me.
It's not...
That physically pains me. Get off your phone when Survivor's on. Come on!
You know, there's a lot going on. So I feel like that the more we complicate things, I think that the worse it gets in terms of the idol stuff. And just to go back to what Alexa was saying about trust the cast, Survivor, I really do think, to its credit, does such an amazing job in casting people that know the game. There are people that played the game in the 20s when there were Mactors and people off the street. Lauren, in your cast, I mean, did 18 out of 20 people like that not just were like fans, like had a very
I was curious how many Survivor nerds were in our group and how many people knew through and through the game.
You guys don't need that many idols and advantages. People are gonna like the players know how to play. Let them play and come up with stuff. You don't need to give them so many weapons to kill each other. There's not gonna be a pagonging because they are gonna play hard from the jump because you cast the show so well. So you found these people. Now let us see them. We don't need to see more toys.
If you ask the viewers and myself to do math with reading the votes, I think that could spell some trouble.
Yeah, less math in general.
I just wanted Rob to rip apart Intern. That's all I wanted. I did this on purpose so that Intern would get thrown under the bus. Oh. No, I'm all about it. But no, I do agree. It was just something that I thought could be somewhat interesting because the idol nullifier, I think, once it happened, the first time it happened, it was, oh, that's kind of cool because we didn't really know where people stood. And it also happened to Dan, who people weren't huge fans of. People definitely liked the underdog David tribe more. But then when it happened to Janet, it's amazing how quick that perspective changes. And it's, we no longer like this, please get rid of it. When in reality, we probably should have never had it.
It was a bad idea to begin with, the idol nullifier, because that the hidden immunity idol was sort of, you know, introduced into the game to be an equalizer from, oh, this side has the numbers. What can we do? Because we root for the underdogs. It gave the underdogs a chance. But the idol nullifier comes along, and the idol nullifier is like, ha, this is a great way for the numerical advantage to stomp out the resistance. And it just so happened in David versus Goliath that it came at the exact point where the group that was in the majority was going to be passed by the group in the minority. So it actually...
Yeah, well, they had the vote stolen. Yes. Like, it was the only time that it would possibly help the minority. It was like a 1 in a million chance.
It was serendipity in David versus Goliath. It was never going to work as well again to bring it back. And it was a mistake to have it again in a season, especially introduced so late in the game.
Janet.
Like, poor Janet.
But and I think that's one of the problems that Survivor's had of late is they're almost like they're hesitant to get rid of things. They're very quick to add in more, but they're hesitant to get rid of those types of things. Like early on, like if you go back to the early 20s, the Medallion of Power was so bad that they got rid of it after 3 episodes because they knew it was a terrible twist. And like, good on production. Like if you know that something's not going to work, get rid of it. Like I'm okay with that, admitting the flaw. But I think that the problem is now, like, they get married to these ideas and they don't want to cut anything. They just want to keep adding.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the problem with the nullifier was that it seemed like it was a success in David versus Goliath, but only because it worked in conjunction with a vote steal to help the underdogs win against a villainous character. Like, it really was so lucky. It should have been like, oh, that worked out miraculously well. Let's never do that again. But because it had been a good TV moment, kind of all the logic fell away and they just did it again. Mm-hmm. And what happened to Janet would be 99 out of 100 times of that nullifier being used, and David versus Goliath was the one. So hopefully Janet's tears are enough for them to realize to never do that again, because bad TV, really bad TV.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Things to introduce, season themes, anything new.
I've got my international ideas ready for you to steal. Okay.
And international ideas that could be imported.
All right. Well, let's go to the, you know, idols are tribal. I think that's where this is going next, right? Obviously, Adam's put it into the U.S. Culture, and obviously no one is watching international, which is kind of sad from production. But I think a lot of international seasons have had idols at tribal. Jeff is worried about people tearing the set apart. Very easy fix. It only gets activated when you find a clue. Exact same as idols at a challenge. Also, we have completely Goldilocks us out in international. We've had it at the voting urn, way too private. We've had it where Adam thought it was, right by Jeff in his spinny little wheel. Way too public. We've had it recently in Australian Survivor, kind of behind the chairs or the stumps, wherever they sit. And that was like private and public enough. So you want to kind of have it at that half place, but it's really fun. And it gives this kind of other element to tribal council. And I definitely think they should be sending it to Fiji, but not just for international, for US.
Okay.
I love an idol and a challenge too. That is so, so fun to watch.
Why didn't they do more of that as well? Like that worked so well. And then it was so, you know, they didn't do it that often after that.
Yeah.
I think maybe they were concerned that people were not like going to be like dogging it in the challenges and like looking for idols all the time.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, challenge is boring.
Yeah, it's worked every time. Yeah.
People would get voted out for like just be looking for idols in the challenges when they couldn't find it. So, yeah. Any downside, Lauren, that you could think of idol at Tribal Council? That are they concerned? That
no. People,
yeah.
I love that. I wanted nothing more than for Adam's fleur-de-lis to be an idol. That would have been such a great moment. And, you know, if any of us ever go back, we're going to be not paying attention to Jeff. We're going to be looking around at everything else trying to figure out where the hell the idol is. So I love that idea.
Yeah.
Idols of Tribal. Yeah.
They should do it. It should happen. Adam Klein will be redeemed finally.
And just on that, you know, the first week of Australian Survivor All-Stars, they had something that built on that that was really, really fun. First challenge was this epic challenge. There was a clue for either tribe in like the hero spot. So you know a big game player is going to find this clue. The clue was that there'd be an idol at Tribal Council, only one idol. So whoever goes to Tribal first is going to get the idol. Now these big game players kind of wanting to throw the challenge. There's also some cross collaboration between those two players because they're the only ones who have this shared secret. So it encouraged challenge throwing. There was just so much fun stuff just in that first challenge and with that first advantage, and it was time limited to just the first three tribal counts, so it wasn't overwhelmingly powerful. So I think that's just a great one off the bat that US could steal.
Yeah, also to build on that, the two people, like the one person from each tribe that was doing that part of the challenge, they knew the other person was the person that had that idol, and then later that there was a like, hey, I know you have that idol, I'm going to Tribal Council, can I have your idol? So
it was big.
Yeah, it was a really great early game mechanic that ended up like creating a lot of intrigue.
Yeah. I really like putting it in either Tribal Council or a challenge or a reward challenge. I don't think people talk about the pasta challenge enough. That was the best 15 minutes of television.
So Australian Survivor has taken that and made it our own and made it better. We've had three of that since the pasta challenge. We've had the nachos. These are the things you'll never be able to look at again, by the way. Nachos, popcorn, and cake. Which have just, they will make you throw up if you see these segments, but they've all been so entertaining. The popcorn segment, we've taken this from HHH, but it's now like an Australian Survivor thing that the US should definitely go back to. The popcorn segment was also with family videos. So it's one of the best segments, I think, in Survivor history internationally. And you're watching these videos, you're trying to eat popcorn and ice cream, and you're looking for this idol. It was so much. And I definitely think US Survivor should be taking from that, because Australian Survivor does it every season now, and it's really entertaining.
And it takes away from the hunt at camp. So then you spend more time at camp learning your characters or hearing more strategy.
Definitely. It's interesting to hear, though, because Phil, like you said, they do get married to these ideas of idols and whatever, but I can't tell you how many rewards we went on where I'm scooping through the peanut butter like it's old school Survivor looking for idols. And I remember in one challenge when I sat out before we were rolling, I was digging and they were like, can you wait and do that when it happens? Well, there's nothing there, but I come back and at the end, my hands are completely covered in mud. But it would have been so cool to find an idol in that moment. And they don't have those moments like, I forgot what season it was, and I think it was Sarah found the idol. She like went under, someone was sitting on the bench, and she
Michaela
found
was
like,
on the bench. Yeah.
More of those moments.
And I'm curious as to why they don't go back to more of those moments. Like, why have we only seen the pasta thing once? Why have we not seen that more? Because everybody was a fan of that. Nobody was complaining about that. People complain about idols all the time and how there's too many of them and how they shouldn't be allowed to be played at Final Five. And we need a pure vote and we don't want the fire making. And these are all things that we consistently see. But then those really great moments, like Michaela being so grumpy in that moment and Sarah just being like, I'm going to take advantage of this, or the pasta challenge where they're throwing the plate, they don't bring those back again. And I just find that to be very weird that they're not.
Yeah, and because they also validate those skills that we're looking for instead of just, oh, you looked in a tree, which bores us all. Instead, it's like awareness or manipulation. For the popcorn reward, it was someone who said, oh, I want to go first to see my kid. And he was crying because there were videos. And they were like, yes, go first. 5 seconds later, after he walks away, they're like, we are such idiots because he manipulated that situation. Those are the skills I want to see, or who's thinking about it in this way and how can you kind of use it to your advantage rather than just like, yeah, who looked in that part of the tree.
Yeah.
More pasta.
More pasta. I'm all about. I think
more popcorn.
I gotta watch this popcorn episode.
I know. I really want to watch these.
I know.
Watch the season. I don't spoil it, but I genuinely think that popcorn reward, and anyone who's watched International will back me up if you're in the chat. But honestly, one of the best moments in the show's history.
Okay. Shannon, what else from International Survivor do you think that U.S. Survivor should be looking to import?
What can be stolen? So we've talked about a lot of it. I would say one of the bigger things is the challenges, which have gotten a little mundane in U.S. Survivor. I know we have a good reputation for some of the challenges. It's not as much of an idea, obviously, but yeah, we did charades. I don't know why Australian Survivor won't do that again. That was amazing. We've brought back the auction. If you want to talk about auction versions, we've had a variation of the auction in Survivor South Africa, Yankee Swap kind of thing. And I think a thing that they have stolen one time and should do more of is group endurance challenges. When it's at the tribal phase pre-merge, instead of just having endurance be a post-merge thing, every post-merge challenge, it seems, have it be a group thing, because then all the focus is on one person or one pair, that if you screw up, you've lost it for the tribe, or you can win it for the tribe. And that always is really dramatic. Mm-hmm. So that's a good one.
Yeah. I think we saw this a lot in the earlier seasons where they had to carry the weight. I think that was just what it was called. And we saw, I think it was Mike Scoop and broke it over his neck or something like that. Like he had the bar and it just snapped. And like, we don't see those anymore. And I don't know why, because that's more visually appealing to me than they're going to do some sort of obstacle that involves them jumping off of something, swimming to something, climbing something, grabbing something, doing a puzzle. Like it's so repetitive now. And one challenge that could very simply do it, and I'm not just saying this, Rob, because we're on your show right now, but again, go back to Amazon. Your memory match challenge, it's so mundane. Like it should be boring to watch, but because it's causing all of you to interact with each other, mm-hmm. when Dan asks the exact person for the exact same thing, I don't remember if it was you or Roger, whoever it was, he asked for the exact same thing. And it shows so much about Dan's character, and it shows so much about the interactions with the other players around. Give us more of that, because even though we walked out of the challenge, I think the women won. I couldn't really tell you. It doesn't matter. It was a reward, but it's one of those like, we walked out of that, and the rest of the storyline in that episode was you guys being like, oh my gosh, they're doing this and they're doing that. And like them talking about how they just able to easily like manipulate you guys. That's the type of stuff we want to see. There's so much more interesting, even in something that is not visually appealing. It is so interesting to an audience to see something like that.
Yeah, that was especially great in the men versus women season, when there was like so much tension about like wanting to talk about the women, and the women wanted to talk about the guys. And then we also did that same challenge also in Survivor All-Stars, where it was like we wanted to interact with the other tribes so badly. So I feel like that in the right season, where there's some sort of like the tribes have been separated for some reason, or All-Stars, I feel like it's really good to see that kind of interaction play out on screen.
And I think it's another good one, too, if we don't want a tribe swap. Mm-hmm. This is another way to get people to interact with each other. And maybe like you actually like look in someone's box and you can only ask them once or something. And maybe they have some sort of advantage or something that you don't know. Like I'm just like just thinking about it. Like there's got to be a way that they can bring something simple like that back to get rid of some of the complexity of other things.
Yeah.
I'll never know why they went away from touchy subjects.
That's exactly what I said.
The last time it was done, I believe, was in Survivor San Juan del Sur, and because that they like gamed it, where that they were basically like trying to vote for. I forget that it was Reed and Missy, and they were trying to engineer who was going to win. And Jeff got mad. He was like, "All right, you know, why don't you guys just tell me who's going to win? Why don't we save the time here today?" So.
That was a chop challenge with, I think, just random trivia. I don't think it was touchy subjects. Like when you did it, Rob, you weren't doing the chop challenge. You were just getting points for the right answers. So they could just do that.
We did both of those challenges, but they were separate. They weren't the same thing.
Okay. So why are they doing touchy subjects? Again, it's a different skill set to validate. It's always so fun, so funny. The chop challenge, which is even different, went poorly one time, and that was enough to get rid of it forever. Like, mm-hmm. other things have gone poorly so many times. How did you go back to the drawing board with that?
With the auction. They have one bad day at the office. Like, that's it.
But then they redid Edge of Extinction? Like, how does that make any sense?
And with the chop challenge, it's such an easy fix. Just make it if you get the question right, you can't be chopped. That's all you have to do to make that challenge more fair. If you get the question right, you can't be chopped, and that means people on the bottom can still have a chance to win. I mean, that's not a hard one to really fix in terms of game at all. It's very simple. So I don't know why they got rid of some of those. I think a lot of those are like really just different fun ideas that unfortunately, touchy subjects. I mean, Lauren, imagine if you would have known who would you trust to win or something, and or who's going to win the game, and it's just Tommy's name, and you're like, well, I thought I was going to win the game. Like, if you see that, that's going to change your perspective on how you're going to play. Do that at final eight or final nine.
Absolutely. It shakes things up for sure.
Okay. Twists, season ideas, international imports.
We gave you a lot.
Did we fix, did we fix Survivor?
I think we did it. I think we did it.
Yeah. Okay. I have some things from the chat that Scott St. Pierre has been collecting as we've been on live. Let's also go ahead and if you are in the YouTube chat, you can also submit your ideas. We can put them up on the screen and do some on the fly. Okay, so let me go ahead and bring in some questions from the listeners live. Scottish Survivor fan, how about an advantage where you can hide at opposing tribes' tribal council without them knowing? I guess that would be pre-merge and for one person.
Robin Sandra vibes.
Yeah, the Robin Sandra shack, Lauren.
Where you can hide it?
You can, that one person from the other tribe is hiding in the Robin Sandra.
Oh, inside the shack at tribal? No. I don't like that at all. Players?
Yeah.
I'm like, hell no. But no, as a viewer, yeah, that would be awesome.
Okay.
But I would want to go to somebody else's tribal.
Yes, yeah, so you go to the other tribal council. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wouldn't want people to come into ours. Right. But yeah.
Right.
I always loved when, like, I think it was you'd win a, I guess it would be winning an immunity challenge. You also get to eat and sit on the jury bench and watch everyone deliberate. I loved that because it's, mm-hmm. it's shoving it in people's faces. I think that's really good
yeah. TV. It could be fun. It could be fun. I don't think it needs to happen every week. Okay. let's take one from Survivor Gods. Let's give Jeff Probst an idol to wear around his neck at Tribal so someone can ask to play the idol for them.
That'd be funny.
Yeah, especially because he's spinning. It's so good.
Yeah. Jeff has got some work to do with these tribal councils.
Unfortunately, missed the days of like his puka shell necklaces. So like, we really can't. It's not going to happen. It's a shame.
Yeah, that would. Couldn't be the idol.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying that like the tribal idol should only be activated by an advantage. Imagine if by a clue. Imagine if the clue was like it's in Jeff's pocket. Go get it.
Like a brooch or something, like on his person.
Oh man, like a weird hat.
Yeah,
oh, this is good.
Yeah,
you have to tackle him.
Yeah,
he's not going to give it up easily. But if you can get it off him,
yeah. Okay.
You have it.
All right. Our friend Once Upon Island says everyone starts with one idol, but no more are hidden in the game. Do we want?
So we don't need about half the idol. We literally probably have the idols in the game, but. I don't like that though.
Yeah.
I'm not totally against it, but I think it gives an opportunity for another advantage get in, which I am extremely against.
Yeah.
I'm not for it. And I think the biggest problem with idols is kind of the same problem that fire tokens had, is there's no limit to it. So we don't know how many we can get to. And like, I still wouldn't trust the production to be like, okay, we're starting. Everybody has one and we're not going to hide anymore. Like I agree with you,
but we should know production aren't going to hide more than 18 idols.
And that's the problem. And it was the same thing like with fire tokens. I was like, oh great. They have an economy of 20. That'll be really fun. And then it turned out that by the end we had an economy of, I couldn't count that high. Like, it was just way too much going on. And if you would have kept it at 20 so that we know how many pieces are in the game. So we know if you have 8, we know that means you almost have half of the tokens. Whereas by the end of Winners at War, I didn't know what Natalie having 16 meant because I didn't know how many were out there. That's kind of what it is with the idols. I don't really know how many there are. If you start with 16, I mean, maybe I hate it, but maybe it would at least let us know. We know that there's 16 idols. If you don't have it anymore, you don't have it anymore.
At least the show would not be pretending anymore. It would just be really out there with what it feels the show has become.
Mm-hmm. Lauren, do you want everybody to start with an idol?
No, absolutely not. I think it's too much. And I think also reintroducing the idol directly after they're played is also something that we could calm down on. Because I think it's expected. And so that right off the bat, right after it's played, people are being predictable and just going to find it. I think limiting the number of idols and not putting them right back into the game will help it not be an advantage.
On that, I mean, having them ended 5 with the fire making, I mean, that's just unacceptable at this point. No pure rounds have to be just not accepted by us. And also, like in Australian Survivor, I feel that around like 8 or 9, if you play it, it just is probably not going to get rehidden. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Late in the game, I don't know why you need to rehide it if it's been played.
I think we've only really seen that in like Survivor Guatemala, because Gary played his and then there was never another one hidden. I think that might be the only time we've seen it where one actually got played early and wasn't rehidden, because after that we saw them held on to for a long time, and maybe China when James got voted out. But for the most part now, it's if you get voted out, I mean, it's been like that for almost 20 seasons now, that one gets hidden immediately after. And it's another thing. It's like you're just numb to it. The same way I'm numb to the fact of them whispering at Tribal, I'm numb to this idea of we're just going to hide another idol.
Well, I think that it changed a lot in Millennials versus Gen X when Adam found it. I think it was 5. And at that point, there wasn't 5 making, but everyone was like, there's no way that Adam would find it. I think they played one at 6, and then they were like, there's no way that it's going to be rehidden at 5. And it was. And it's kind of jarring to watch in hindsight, because now it would be expected. You'd never be questioning whether one is going to be rehidden at 5 or 6. It definitely will be. So I think since then, it's like all bets have been off.
Okay. Let's take a couple more of these questions. Steven says, a Survivor YouTube channel had this, but what if the person voted out is able to cast a penalty vote on another player? Example, Rob gets voted out, and at the elimination confessional, he casts a penalty vote for Lauren to receive at her next tribal council. You know, this is an idea I feel like that has come up way back when, since I was doing the think tanks with Survivor. I feel like that this was called, had different names that people have called it, but basically, we kind of saw like what the execution of this would look like at the end of each episode of Winners at War, where what if instead of the place where you bequeath your fire tokens, there's a place where you can place your vote for the next tribal council and give one vote to a player on the way out the door. Do we like this as an idea?
I think that's super difficult, because then that's, again, giving power to somebody that's been voted out of the game. And I just feel like I would like to see us get away from that. So I don't think that would work or be fair, because you could be spiteful and just give it to the person. You know, if you're an alliance and you know how the cards are going to fall, you can give it to that person and all the votes are piled on them, or whatever the case may be. I just feel like them having an impact on the game after they voted out isn't fair to the players that are still in the game.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem with Edge of Extinction, is that, you know, it was giving too much power to people who shouldn't have any power. And I think, like, if you get voted out, everybody's so bitter. I mean, after you get voted out, because it sucks, you're rightfully mad, but you shouldn't be able to then impact somebody who just blindsided you and pulled like a great move. If they pulled a great move, you shouldn't be able to affect it.
Yeah, and I like how the bequeathing of fire tokens works, as much as everyone hates that word. Like, I think it's baked into the format of the twist itself. It does give some power to the person voted out, but it's not like this brutal thing. I think anything that kind of takes away from someone who's just done an amazing move and then would obviously discourage people from making amazing moves by knowing that they could get votes on them for doing that from someone who doesn't have any power left in the game isn't a good thing. So I think they've struck a good balance with bequeathing the fire tokens, and that it's somewhat positive. It's not that important. You still do, you know, get to have your final say and give someone something, but it's not like game breaking.
All right. Let's take this question from Jordan Mays. Imagine a leech advantage. You play it on somebody, and if they win immunity, you also get to leech it.
I like that.
Okay. I like that too.
What would it be before tribal council? You say, hey, I'm going to play this advantage on Tony. And if Tony wins immunity, I get it too.
And you're sharing it, you're not taking it, right?
Would people know until it's done? Like, or are you saying it out loud? Like, okay, Tony wins? Yeah, like, how would that... I think it could be cool, though.
I don't love stealing individual immunity, because I think that's a very pure part of the game that shouldn't be touched, but I think sharing it...
Yeah, sharing.
Like, I think sharing it's cool, and then I think,
maybe,
you know, like Lauren said, like, do you wear it or is it hidden?
Yeah, it's a little bit like, Lauren, what you had to do to bet on somebody to win immunity at a certain point of like, it's like, okay, you get one shot this whole merge of like, if you think you can pick the immunity winner, you get it too. I don't know, if you're wrong, do you lose your vote or is there any penalty? Do we like that when people lose their vote? No.
No. You don't like it, Phil? You don't?
I don't like it. No. Okay.
Why?
I feel like is there like a reason here? I don't think that there's a real reason. I just don't like it. I just think that when somebody loses their vote, I think like that's the most powerful thing you can have in the game. And I think when you take that away from somebody, it's just too manipulated. Like, I feel like Tony would have lost his vote in Winners at War, and Tony didn't do anything wrong in order to lose that vote. So I think that like a baseline Survivor game, every single person should get a chance to vote. And every single person should get a chance to like win an individual immunity. I think those are the two things that are necessary for Survivor. You should never have your vote taken away from you. You should never have the chance to win individual immunity taken away from you, because those are the two most important things in the game.
Okay. All right. let's go to this question from Scott. I'm 61. I watch the All Access extras. I'd like more, especially of more camp life rather than confessionals. Okay. So it's not just for the young people on CBS All Access.
We should not have age shamed.
Yes.
Of course. That was all me. I will take all the blame for that. But that was more of like one of those, I think CBS is looking at it that way. I'm not looking at it that way, because I know that there are people who are going to watch it. But I do think that CBS might be looking at it as we have an older audience, and whatever data they're looking at says they don't watch 10 minute things on CBS All Access. And so they don't think it's as valuable, but I think it would be incredibly valuable for them to put it on there.
All right. Liam says, I'm Australian, and my opinion is Australian Survivor is far too bloated and long, and US is more concise and satisfying to me. All right. So Liam says, US Survivor is doing great, but Shannon, maybe you should have Liam on some sort of a State of Australian Survivor podcast.
I mean, as I said, we definitely are going to be doing an Australian Survivor think tank. It definitely is too long, but that's for commercial reasons. There has to be a middle ground between 3 hour-and-a-half episodes a week and 142-minute episode a week, and that there is a middle ground. It's Survivor South Africa. It's brilliant. Perfect time. Yeah. 60 minutes a week. Perfect.
Okay. Kevin Wadsworth, old format issue is time, and it forced them to show every juror. If a juror had a lame question and they are forced to show it still, it's all about editing. This is from someone who hates the new format. Okay, so
make the jury smaller.
Yes.
That's also something we want.
Yes. What's the ideal jury size? Is it 7? Is it 8?
7.
Yeah, 7 or 8. Yeah.
7 or 8.
Okay. I think final 10. I think if you make the merge, if they were to merge at 10, that should be it.
Okay. All right. And then Jack O'Donnell says, team captain draft or reward challenge where the captain could pick from both teams would be such an interesting concept.
That'd be a lot. Away.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on small ideas. I feel like that we've talked about so much like big, important stuff. Like, and I don't want to have that get lost with sort of like, you know, the deck chairs here. You know, I really think that we've talked about a lot of the big picture issues. I feel like that overall, the state of Survivor is, I think, is strong. I think that Survivor, as Shannon said, is coming off of a great, great season. And I think that people are as excited about Survivor as they were any time 5 years, 10 years ago. And I think there's very few shows and franchises that could say that same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Totally agree.
And I think as well, like, I still believe, as much as I love Survivor, I think for us in the community, anyone listening to this podcast, I do believe that the best of Survivor at the moment is what you make of it and all the things beyond it. All the content that is available, the podcast, like this global community to me is so amazing. So that is always going to be incredible. And the show itself has so much good stuff there. That's why we've built this community around it. And I think with some of these ideas and some of these shifting mentalities to make it a little less homogenous, more diverse, as we've said, in so many different ways, it'll only be better for the show and can move it in a really good direction.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. And End of Extinction, obviously.
Obviously. I think that's the only thing people are disappointed in right now. I think if you came off of season 40, the only thing people are genuinely annoyed about is that Edge of Extinction was there, that Natalie finished second despite being the first person voted out. I think other than that, I think people are very excited. And I mean, it's like season 39 had obviously very dark moments, but there was a lot of good in that season. And it's about finding the good and moving forward with it and evolving Survivor so that we're only having the good, and get rid of all the stuff that is being problematic, has been problematic in the past, and has been problematic for 20 years. Get rid of it and keep moving forward. And I think that's why people are so excited about it right now, because it feels like it's going to be fresh for season 41.
Yep. The format is a beloved format. People from all over the world, from every corner of the world, have fallen in love with this format of the show. And I do think that that love is still there. And I think that there are certainly little things that we can fix, things that are getting us away from like that pure format of the show. And the people that come out from all different walks of life to play in this show. And in the past, that there has been a lot of talk of like, oh, well, so this is a show that's going to be a mirror for what's happening in the world, or this show is a mirror, a representation of America. But it doesn't have to necessarily be a mirror of what's out there. That Survivor could be the kind of society that people want to have. It could be a vision of something that people want to create. So I think that we could look to Survivor one day. It's in a position where we could look to Survivor to set an example and not necessarily be a reflection of the imperfections in our own world.
Agreed.
Wow. I don't have a really good speech prepared. I should have come with one. I'm so sorry, guys. We completely agree. Look, completely with you.
We're all speaking with love for this show. I have felt like at different times that sometimes the criticism is like, oh, I guess you hate the show. Not true.
Didn't Jeff actually say that word for word?
I don't recall. We're just
you always want to improve something that you love.
You do.
You always want the best version of something that you care about.
Yeah. And I think, like, Rob, what you just said, how it could be like kind of the society we want to see. And I'm going to keep on saying this. Get rid of the word verse every time that you create something. Because David versus Goliath, heroes versus villains, fans versus favorite. But David versus Goliath probably shouldn't have been the name of the season. But either way, I think when you put in verse, you're immediately creating a division. And I think that takes away, we already know there's going to be a division. There's a tribe division. They're going against each other. But when you make it, when you put the word verse in there, it just makes it so hard to create like any type of unity. And I think that it's, you know, it's caused problems way back. But I think that that's like a first thing that Survivor could do to kind of work its way towards being what we want to be seeing. If it wants to be a mirror of real life, get rid of the word verse, because we don't want that word. Like, we don't want that in real life. That's just how I feel.
Okay. Any other thoughts as Survivor? Do we want to touch on anything production-wise? We trust Survivor as a plan for shooting in the midst of a pandemic. It doesn't sound like it's going to be my Wild Wild West season coming to fruition.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay.
What about these 16 and 17-year-olds, though?
Oh, we didn't touch on that. Yeah, what? That's get out of here with that. That is crazy talk.
Right? I am not supportive.
Do you think, Rob? That's, you guys don't like that idea? I think this goes along with what Phil was saying. And I'm not saying, like, you see some of these really popular shows, like The Bachelorette, whatever, they don't have young people playing them, but they have young people online. I think there's an audience being missed there with 16 and 17-year-olds. Now, how do you have them mentally prepared to go live on an island and be voted out and da 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 da? How do you do that? It's hard enough for adults. But I think if they can do it right, I think it could be great.
Is it all 16-year-olds or is it 16-year-olds and adults?
Maybe it's with their parents. I don't know. It could be fun. I think that it's a great... being a former nanny, I had a lot of kids saying, oh my God, Jeff said 16-year-olds. And I think it created that excitement within them that I had when I was little. Phil, Alexa, you guys had the same thing when you were chicken.
And I've waited. I waited till I was 18 and now I'm 28. I'm still not on the show. They can wait two more years.
Yeah. My sticking point is the mental health part I'm very nervous about. In season 40, the players are so candid about how taxing the game can be on your mental health. However, The Bachelor, 16 years old, sign me up. I love that.
No.
That's an example. Like, online social media, like, there is, CBS needs to pick it up a little bit. So I think that kids want, like, kids, I've had a lot of kids reaching out to me. I could name like 10 off the top of my head being like, I want to
apply.
Yeah. I've had people reaching out to me too who are 16. And my perspective on this, I said in our finale podcast, was that I went on reality TV when I was 18. And I don't think I should have. And I think that as much as I wanted to do it and the teenagers want to do it, 27-year-old me would go back to 18-year-old me and be like, you don't want to be on TV when before you are the person you're going to be. You don't want to open yourselves up to the trolls who were bad in 2011 and would be way worse now. I just think it's kind of irresponsible. And I actually think that if anything, casting is skewed too young at the, you know, for the last few seasons, so there should be more age diversity. And I think we've lost a lot of really good characters that they've been skewing younger by and large for the last few seasons. So I get that they want to do it, and I'd love some other ideas to get teenagers excited about the show, because I know I loved it when I was a teenager, that aren't actually putting them on the show. Because as an 18-year-old who had people in the forums talking about me, and it wasn't even on an island, but I was in a bikini. So anyway, it's too much. It was too much for me, and I think it would be too much for most.
And I think it's going to if they do it, it will change Survivor as we know it. It'll change completely. They'd have to, because it is mentally horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Shannon, you nailed it, where like you're not the person you want to be yet at 16 or 17. You don't know. And right now, like, I know like a lot of people have really good experiences with Survivor, but there are people who come off Survivor and their life is ruined when they come off Survivor, or they feel like just so down and they didn't have a good experience with it. And I worry that with 16 and 17 year olds who, when I'm 16, I thought I was the coolest person in the world. I thought everything was going to be great and everything was going to be easy. And like, now I look back at 16-year-old me and I'm like, he sucked. So I think like, you don't want to put yourself out there for the entire world to judge you and to knock you down, because when people who are more experienced and more set in their ways and more comfortable with themselves are still having a hard time with it, what's going to happen to a 16 or 17-year-old who goes out there and is not portrayed the way they expect to see themselves portrayed?
Also,
yeah, and now with Twitter and Instagram and all that, we're more accessible. Yeah. So that is true. But I still want to see it, okay? If it's 41, you guys are all going to watch.
Yeah.
Forget
the mental health, the physical health. Like, is it good for a 16-year-old to go out and starve and lose like 25 pounds?
Probably better than a 72-year-old like Joe Del Campo.
Well, and that's where I think they would have to change the
game.
Joe Del
Campo's in great shape.
Yeah, you have to adjust the game.
They couldn't not for 39 days.
To try something for CBS All Access, then that's fine. But just like that, we don't need to do that on the Survivor proper. And again, I think a 16-year-old out there in a cast of all adults, I think, is also a very bad idea.
Could they do one of these like backyard Survivor things, like how they do Survivor Maryland, Survivor Michigan, Survivor that? Could they do Rob's Survivor Wild West, set it over like 2 weeks and make it 16 and 17 year olds?
Yeah, let's do it.
You know, and a 16, 17 year old, why not? I mean,
that's fine.
That would be the only way I would watch it.
Yeah, if Jeff Probst wants to produce a different show, executive producer, you know, let's.
I think it's called Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. But with cowboys, this will be fun.
But this was such a great conversation tonight. I'm really happy with how this turned out. Phil and Alexa, I have to give you guys all the credit for coming up with the idea to do something. And I'm glad that we were able to nail the timing on this, because I think it was really perfect.
Yeah, this could not have gone any better. I mean, I know that we've tried to do stuff in seasons past and it hasn't worked out with the timing and everything, but I think this was the right time to do it. I really do. And this was a great 2.5 hours. It flew by. We talked about a lot, and hopefully we gave people some like hope, positivity, all of that good stuff for Survivor moving forward. And hopefully people are still excited about 41.
Yeah, thanks to everyone here for doing this. This was a five-person effort, way more than five people. So yeah. this was awesome.
Well, this was a great collaboration with you guys, because then we were able to get the format. We heard from all the different Survivor podcast fans. So this was really, really fun getting to work on this together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we definitely came together very quickly. I think it was only like Friday that we nailed down the details of how we were going to do all this. But I'm very impressed with how we got this all to come together tonight.
I always love the behind the scenes where it's like, hey, Rob wants to talk on Friday. What are we going to talk about? And then all of a sudden it turns into this. I mean, I love when that happens. It's always fun when you can see that.
Yeah. Lauren, thank you so much for being a part of this. What do you have going on outside of talking about Survivor?
I might be moving to New York soon.
Oh my gosh.
Pending the pandemic and the world heals.
New York isn't bad anymore.
Well, that's what they're telling me. I did sign a contract, so I guess I'm going. It's just a matter of when.
And just trying to do my hosting thing. I do want to say I noticed that Survivor had Parv and some other people doing some after shows. So if they want to hire me for that, I would love to do it. I'm here. And I want to thank you, Rob, as well, for giving me an opportunity to do the carpet. I had so much fun with you, giving Bryce an opportunity, like all these great things that you're doing, supporting the community. I am here for it. And Alexa and Phil, it's always great to talk with you. I know you guys think I'm acting brand new because I was on Talent Recap, but I would love to be on your show anytime. And Shannon, it's great to meet you. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Laura. How's your quarantine been?
Oh, it's amazing. I love it. I'm a TikTok animal. I love it. I'm an extroverted introvert.
You're making a lot of TikToks.
Listen, TikTok is a good workout.
Yeah.
It's a good way to hype yourself up and feel good about yourself. You're having a bad day. So I'm all for TikTok.
What's your TikTok handle?
At Lauren Ashley Beck.
Okay. All right. I gotta check it out.
Got to keep it consistent across all mediums.
Yeah. Yes. On brand all the time.
Okay. And Shannon, I know you've been on a Survivor break for a while. Yeah. Thank you for breaking your Survivor time out to join us to talk about this tonight.
Yeah, no, it was super fun waiting back in. It was great to meet three of the four of you. Rob, always great to chat. But yeah, I had a really fun time. I think the discussion was really great. I don't know how it ended up on, you know, Cowboys, Lord of the Flies. I don't know if that's what the end point we wanted for, but I love the journey to get there. So thanks for having me.
Yes. Okay. All right. And if anybody's binging on the International Survivor in this offseason and you haven't caught all of Shannon's podcast, check that up on our International Rehab Up feed, of course, on robiswebsite.com. Phil and Alexa, if anybody's joining us here watching on YouTube and they don't watch the Survivor Specialists, how do they find more of your stuff?
You can find us on all forms of social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We try to be like Lauren and have consistency across our usernames, but on Twitter, it's Specialist without the vowels. We're on YouTube, we're on Spotify, and we're on iTunes. And Rob, again, thank you so much for letting us join. Thanks so much for this collaboration. This was a ton of fun.
This was really great. We have some more Survivor coming up tomorrow because I'm going to be getting together with Mike Bloom and Jessica Leese, where we are going to be simulating the season of Survivor Ink Island. Lauren, get this. Mike Bloom, he has narrowed the field down to 16 Survivor-themed tattoos that he is going to have potentially put onto his body, and we are going to be simulating a Survivor season where the winner of Survivor Islands of Ink will be tattooed onto Mike Bloom. That is, we're going to be recording that tomorrow.
Why is it only potential? Why is this not definitely happening?
No, well, one of them will go on. He's not getting 16 tattoos. He's only getting one.
So this is happening.
The winner of the season. But although I do believe no tattoo is in the field.
I hope that one gets voted out first. We don't need that in our lives.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is great. Where does the tattoo have to be?
I think that's up to, that's between Mike Bloom and Angela Bloom. I don't think that that's.
You should do a Brad Steele of body parts after this.
It'll be a long off season. We'll see. All right. But thank you so much, Scott St. Pierre, behind the scenes. Thanks to everybody who filled out the Google form and participated in this. Really appreciated that. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.